It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham, Matthew Ingram, and Jeff Jarvis are all here to talk about some googly stuff. Google's gone all solar. Deep Minds has an ethics board, but no one will say who it is. And it looks like they're dropping the drone deliveries. Now, I hope it's not on your head. Coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 382, recorded Wednesday, December 7th, 2016. Last Media. This Week in Google is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and enter the promo code TWIG. And by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about the latest in Google, Facebook, Twitter, the world. That's because we have such a smart, fun, interesting panel. We like to get their opinions, starting to my right with the wonderful Stacey Higginbotham, who's done double duty this week. She, of course, is on the Stacey on IoT podcast, but she was also on Twit on Sunday and has returned on Wednesday. It was fun having you and Ohm together again.
We had a good time.
Yeah. We should have had Matthew Ingram on, too, another Giga Ohm veteran. He's now at Fortune.com. Hey, Matthew.
Hi.
From the Great White North.
Yes.
Is it snowing?
No.
No.
In fact, we've had no snow at all.
That's misnamed. North of the 49th parallel. That's all we need to say. And visiting us from just down the road a piece this week, which explains why his sound is so poor, Jeff Jarvis. It's always better in Germany, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't know. I think something happened. You sat on your headset or something. It's all right. The picture is superb. That's why I know it's not a bandwidth thing. It's not a Skype thing. It's
It's Google Wi-Fi. Jeez.
Yeah. Google has enough Wi-Fi. Hey, you know what? That's kind of cool. All of that Wi-Fi, solar powered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am stunned. This is the Google keyword blog. We're set to reach 100% renewable energy. As you might imagine, actually, I don't think people think about this, but when you do a Google search, it uses energy. When you watch a YouTube video, it searches energy. When you upload a YouTube video, it uses energy. By next year, Google is going to be 100% renewable energy for every bit of their operation, including data centers.
What about buses?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, it's look at this, though, because this graph tells you something. Let me zoom it in a little bit so you can see. It's the yellow part of the graph is solar, so it's really just a fraction solar. It's almost all wind.
Holy cow. That's a lot of wind.
Wind is
no, really.
Plentiful and cheap. I mean,
it is. Yeah.
And you can put it where a lot of their data center operations, they've been planning and putting their data centers in places where they have access to easy wind power. So that's been part of their planning strategy.
So. Oh, really? Is that true that they kill birds? Aren't birds smart enough not to fly into the spinning? It's not like they spin like a fan in your house. They're stately.
Dumb birds, then.
You'd have to be a dumb bird.
Yeah.
There are issues there, but, you know, it's better than killing birds with coal.
Oil.
Yeah.
Oil.
Yeah.
Facebook is 100%. Looks like it's 100% wind.
Does Google do geothermal as well? Or no?
Well, this graph, they have an 180 megawatt project in Chile. They just bought all the electricity from didn't just do it. This was their first purchase from a 114 megawatt wind farm in Iowa. And they currently buy 2.6 gigawatts of power And as
Giga or Giga?
Well, okay. As Urs Holzel, the senior vice president for technical infrastructure, writes, that's bigger than many large utilities and more than twice as much as the 1.21 gigawatts it took to send Marty McFly to the future. So that's how they said it in the movie gigawatts, but obviously it's gigawatts. I think it's the, is it the old GIF?
Yeah.
GIF?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not going to be Giga Stacy. So we're sticking with Giga.
Excellent point. Excellent point. Now, is this the question is, are they using this directly or are these with credits?
Yeah, subsidies.
Yeah.
Like offset? Is it offset or is it direct?
It kind of implies that it's direct, but.
Some of their data center stuff is direct. I don't know if it's all direct. Actually, this whole post is basically that it's direct.
Implies that it's direct. They're not saying we're buying offsets.
Well, but the graphics.
We were one of the first corporations to create large-scale long-term
contracts. Oh, the graphics
says
credits. Okay. Oh, yeah, RECs. Yeah. So the RECs. Green lines are RECs. Those are the renewable energy credits. And then the yellow lines electricity. And then the mix are bundled energy and RECs. So, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Oh, it's still good.
I don't know what I just did here. Tapped the button too many times. See,
and it
double
makes sense,
tap, I'm like, supposed to be able to illustrate this. Yeah, because you don't necessarily have wind farms next door to the Mountain View offices,
right.
Things like that.
Right.
Although, you know, it would be nice if we did. 20 agreements to purchase renewable energy. 6 new agreements last year, 842 megawatts. The largest aggregate purchase of renewable energy ever made by a non-utility. $3.5 billion in capital investments worldwide generated by renewable energy products from which we buy electricity. So that's not Google money, but they're kind of subsidizing it.
And largest corporate purchaser of renewable energy in the world.
Wow.
So they said in 2015, they consumed 5.7 terawatt hours of electricity across all their operations, which is nearly as much electricity as San Francisco used in the same year.
Wow.
And that's from their white paper.
But what that tells you, I mean, you know, you never think about the fact that you're doing a Google search, you're using energy.
I do.
Good for
but
you.
I'm crazy.
That's because you're
well, it's part of their cost. No, it's part of their costs of goods, basically. So they've got to take that into consideration.
Right.
So making it clean.
Remember a few years ago, I was reading an interview with somebody, I can't remember who now, who was sitting beside Larry Page at some event and asked him what is the single biggest challenge Google faces in the future. And Larry reportedly said power.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, they design these networks operation centers, which are the chief users of power. They design them to be in places where power is cheap, like Oregon, mm-hmm. where wind and other renewable resources are plentiful. A lot of times they put them somewhere where because cooling is the other big use of power. Mm-hmm. So they put them somewhere where they have seawater cooled. I think Facebook at least has some seawater cooled. Network operations centers as well.
Actually, a bunch of downtown Toronto is cooled by water from the harbor.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So birds aren't killed.
By being in Canada.
Luke Liam says annually 214,000 to 368,000 birds are killed, according to treehuggers.com, by windmills. But the Smithsonian says it's 10,000 to 600,000. So it's.
But we've got lots of birds, right? Am I wrong?
How many birds are killed by cats annually? I think it's a lot more than that. And we ain't getting rid of cats anytime soon.
And they don't provide power. So.
And all the cat does, well, there's some purring involved, but that's not.
Well, look at the cat behind me.
I was going to say, Matthew, there's a cat right behind you. How's he handling it?
No power. It's powerless.
I should ask.
Sleeps for 23 hours a day.
Let me use some of this cheap energy and ask Google. How much power, birds are killed annually by cats?
How much power does a cat produce?
3.7 billion birds are killed annually by cats.
Wow. Okay, Google.
Billion. Wow.
How many birds are killed by wind farms?
Well, we're
how many birds are killed annually by wind farms?
573,000 birds and 888,000 bats are killed every year by wind turbines.
Kill all the bats you want. I don't like
no,
them.
No, bats are great.
No, they eat bugs.
They eat mosquitoes. We love bats.
How many birds are killed by office towers? I know that's a big number.
What? They fly into the windows?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Chicago has a big program about because they're on migratory routes for some kind of bird. So they mm-hmm. black them out
that's
at
right.
night.
By the way, I don't know how
988 million die in window collisions.
Oh, so
it's almost a billion.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So that puts the number in perspective. Yes, a lot of birds are killed by wind turbines, even with the, you know, Smithsonian, the lowest estimate is 10,000 annually. The highest estimate, 600,000.
But that's a tiny fraction.
A fraction of the number just fly into buildings.
Yeah.
I had two killed last year who flew into our windows. So,
bird killer.
I know. It's
how
terrible.
Many turkeys are killed every year for Thanksgiving?
Oh, Lord.
According to PETA, like chickens, the 300 million turkeys raised and killed for their flesh every year in the United States have no federal legal protection.
I didn't ask you about that. Three. That's an over answer. Thank you, but that's you're over answering.
We're going down a rabbit hole now.
She's so preachy. Google's time lapse. So Google is actually now. It's good PR. It's good for their business, but I think they actually do care about renewable. And I'm glad to see they're doing this. They have put together these really interesting time lapses at the Google Earth engine.
Yeah, those are fascinating.
These are zoomable videos that let you see how the Earth's changed over 32 years, because that's as long as we've had satellite pictures. This is Miami, so you can see as it gets built up. What do you want to look at? San Francisco? I wish we had this for like 100 or 200 years. Because that's when you'd really see like these cities appear out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. After you build your time machine, you can go back and put up satellites.
Well, that's or go into the future. Here's the Shiraz Glacier. Which one do you want to see?
I was gonna say, go look at like Greenland or Iceland.
Yeah, this is an Antarctic glacier.
Or
over 32 years, which pretty much looks the same.
Yeah, it looks fine.
Oh, you could try down in like Chile or
here's the Columbia Glacier, Columbia. Which is in Alaska, up above the 49th parallel. You know, these are not as well. There's some melting going on there.
Yeah.
How about Vegas? Vegas has changed a lot. No more glaciers in the desert. I don't know. It's just kind of cool. It is, and it's limited totally. Oh, boy. That's a lot of growth in 32 years.
Sprawl.
Yeah. This is totally limited, of course, by the prevalence of satellite pictures. But this is a cool idea. So this comes from NASA's Landsat program, most of them. The Copernicus Sentinel program from the EU and other, the U.S. Geological Survey.
You know, it struck me, speaking of power, looking at, especially driving through Philadelphia or anywhere, you know, Pittsburgh area, anywhere there were sort of steel mills. A lot of those spots are where Google and other companies have put server farms because, you know, they get a lot of power. It's right by a dam or something. And in many cases, they're orders of magnitude larger than the steel mills they replaced. But they take, you know, 10 people to operate. Whereas the steel mill employed 20,000.
You know, I just discovered at Bethlehem, PA, they took the rusting old hulk of Bethlehem Steel and built a bridge next to it so you could walk along. And it is awe-inspiringly huge, the amount of energy that it took to burn things, to push forced air into it. It's amazing the energy we do use.
Well, and this is where, you know, this is what Google's mission is data, right? And it's very interesting to see how data is used to learn things. Hour of Code. This is the week of the Hour of Code. Are you taking your daughter somewhere, Stacy, to code?
Her school does it. Although every time she comes home with her, I did my Hour of Code, she's kind of like, I'm like, and how did you feel about it? And she's like,
Well, she may not every. So, you know, remember President Obama said, I want every child to learn how to code. I don't. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I actually, what I believe is that, and I think there's a lot of research to show this, and I've talked to people who agree that coding could be taught in math classes, that much of the benefit mm-hmm. you get in math, which is rigorous thinking, problem solving, you could get from coding, and they're very closely related, and you could easily integrate coding into math curricula all around the country. And I think, so, you know, a lot of times when kids are doing algebra, they go, why am I doing this? What am I going to ever get out of this? I think code as would be equally probably challenging and maybe uninteresting to some, but at least you could look at it and say, well, I could see what the value of this is. You know, I mean, I may not be that interested, but I could see why you would want to learn that.
I think it would be for kids a better way to do it. And her school does it this way. They code using Minecraft. So they're actually making Minecraft mods for their hour of code, which shows them, hey, this directly applies to something you care desperately about.
Does she play Minecraft?
Oh, God, yes. So she watches the videos, too. So much happening.
Yeah, no. Well, this is a Microsoft course on Minecraft, and they're doing a whole bunch of hour of code stuff. And I'm sure her school is using the curricula that Microsoft offers for free for grades 2 and up. How about that?
I think it's important that they see this.
You think that they got a good deal on Minecraft? What was it, 3 billion? 3.2 billion?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's worth like 10 times that much.
Well, and also the, you know, the mind share that they get as a result of this has got to be huge. I mean, these kids love Minecraft, and now, you know, it's a Microsoft thing. Go ahead.
Do they get licensing deals based on all the Lego things and all of the... I mean, we have Minecraft stuffed animals in our house. So is Microsoft getting a cut of that?
It all goes right into Bill Gates' pocket. Okay, so the chicken... Here's the chicken. Is frozen. Place, move, and turn blocks in the when spawn shot to get it to move. Chicken, when spawn, move forward. You can put that in here. Uh-huh. Turn left... Put that in there, snaps, and then play a cluck. Let's see. Did I program my... Let's get that snapped in there, too. There we go. And let's run my code.
Go, chicken.
Yeah. Yay. See how fun this is? And what's nice, they're smart.
You're a programmer.
I'm a programmer. Look, I'm going to write a billion-dollar app. This is good. They show a hip young woman doing it.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm a software developer on Minecraft, and...
I'm telling you, the sparkly shoes, they would win over, right now.
You see why?
Like, I would be like, yeah.
You can see why they showed it, right? I mean, that's...
When you're holding the fish,
she's hip and cool.
The ocelot will sneak towards you, and if you feed it the fish, you tame it, and the ocelot is your own cat.
Oh, my God, my daughter wants an ocelot so badly.
As humans,
not a real one. A Minecraft ocelot, I hope.
A Minecraft ocelot. Her menagerie in Minecraft is pretty intense.
Yeah. I have a little.
It's cool. People are building like hard drives or like functioning processors inside Minecraft.
Oh yeah, there's some really amazing. Let me see if I can find it. There's a wonderful video. This is kind of old, of a Minecraft computer using redstone. I don't know. The guy who did this.
Wow.
Spent a lot of time. Yeah. But I Minecraft is Lego. It really is it's Lego for the 21st century, and it's getting kids. I think in a lot of ways, even just playing Minecraft teaches you kind of fundamental concepts that are useful in later life in technology. In a lot of ways, this is huge.
Well, did I show you guys? I think this was my pick one week. Was the Little Bits Minecraft mod
really neat stuff.
That's cool.
And we've talked about. In fact, we had. Karsten's son came in. Zach came in and reviewed the Piper computer kit, which is a kit that it's actually going to be, I'm sure it's a hot Christmas present. Look, he's typing on he types and it's coming out on the terminal. In Minecraft, folks, non-trivial. What you have to understand is that terminal is like 800 stories high. It's gigantic. It's huge. Let me show you the Piper. This is for parents who are of kids like around maybe 8 to 12.
I got that.
Did you get the Piper? Oh, you have that. You have that child.
I have a child from 8 to 12. Yeah. We've played with the Kano, but not the Piper.
This is playpiper.com. If she's into Minecraft, because what's neat is it's $300. It's a little pricey, but what you get is a whole computer, a Minecraft computer that you assemble, but also with it, and this is the really cool stuff, comes little assignments that you, because it also has switches and buttons and knobs and buzzers and breadboards. And so you get little levels like Freaky Fungi, build an array of buttons and switches, physical ones, not in Minecraft, to navigate your way across giant mushrooms. So it's going to use the actual physical buttons that come with the kit, plus the switches. So I think
sort of wish I had younger kids now.
I know. Wouldn't this be fun? It really does probably need a little help from mom or dad, but I think this is really neat. Are we overburdening Minecraft to make it responsible for teaching our kids everything now? It's like, no, you're going to like it. It's Minecraft. Yeah, I heard that before.
Yeah, like whenever I give my daughter some of these things, she looks at me and she's like, I see this. This is just one of your STEM toys, Mom.
She knows.
I did a big review of children's software, like educational software. This was years ago. So they were CDs and stuff. But I remember talking to this professor and he said, kids are really, really good at finding the fun parts of whatever you give them and avoiding or finding ways around the educational parts.
Well, don't you remember that as a kid, right?
Oh, yeah. Or,
yeah.
You have to trick them into doing something.
Exactly.
It's less tricking, but giving them the opportunity to say, because some kids are, they're going to be like, holy cow, I can totally own this game. And those are the same people who, you know, 20 years ago played, you know, learned how to code on their own. So it's... I think it's important to have the exposure, but yeah.
No, that was always my attitude is I don't know what's going to stick, but I want to get my kids, I'm sure you guys felt the same way, exposed to as many different things as possible so that they can find the one that sticks, because you don't really know ahead of time.
You do not?
You don't. You can't tell.
I was going to say, next week I'm going to bring it. I got my daughter a... Anki Cosmo, the little Cosmo robot.
Oh, so, you're going to love it. We had one here. It's so cool.
We're so excited.
You told her already?
Oh, so her grandparents are giving it to her, and we're doing Christmas this weekend at their house.
Oh, nice.
So.
This is really interesting because this is a programmable computer, but it's got design was by some former Pixar engineers, and so it's very much personified, kind of like WALL-E. And that's to me what makes this kind of interesting. And then you program it; you can actually write Python code for it. It's got an API, but it also plays games. Yeah, I think this is a really interesting. If I had to pick one of these toys, this would be the one that would be the big one this season. It's got a little companion cube he can play games with. Plays hide and seek.
I was trying to write a piece. I really fear that we're going to see a huge backlash to technology when populists discover that it's not immigration that costs their jobs. It's this little thing. It's robots and automation technology.
That was the Luddite revolution, right? Ned Ludd, who may or may not have existed, led weavers to destroy the Jacquard looms because... they were losing jobs to Jacquard to the looms.
Right.
Well, and if you think about it,
go ahead, Matthew.
Just the other day, I was looking at the number of long-haul truck drivers in the United States. That job is effectively going to disappear. That's literally hundreds of thousands of people.
And those
if you look at the map of states, the most common jobs in most American states is truck driver.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So humanizing automation like that, I think, is really interesting. And I wonder what impact, if any, it has on kind of the national conversation around it.
So Amazon Go, which I don't know if we're going to talk about, but the grocery store concept that they just unveiled in Seattle.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, my cashiers, first job forget about it.
Was a cashier. And I'm like, I think there'll still be customer service kind of jobs. Like people in the store, but not as many. If you think about automation and stocking, then oof.
Yeah.
So the idea of this store, and there's and they only have one right now as kind of a beta, is there isn't even an automated checkout. You just put stuff in your bag
and walk out.
And it has cameras. It's kind of like in Vegas, the Honor Bar in Vegas, where if you move the peanuts, you get charged for the peanuts. But
that's exactly what we can. We talked about it on our show for tomorrow, and that's exactly what I was like. It's the hotel mini bar fridge.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a little more sophisticated. You saw in this video that when you go in, you use the your smartphone to check in, so it knows you, and it's clearly got to associate you with the purchase, right? So there's cameras following you around, sensors. I would guess, and sensors, because it's got to know that you're the one that moved the cheesecake cupcake from the refrigerator and put it in the bag. But then you just walk. I mean, as a shopper, you love this, right? As a worker, but this is, look, this is coming. I mean, can you legislate against stuff like this? I guess you could.
No. Well, they're going to need someone to repair the sensors, right?
Yeah, there's the economics of doing this are really interesting, because you turn your wage expenditures over time into an upfront capital expenditure. And then you think about where down the value chain, like who affixes the RFID to the packaging. Right now, it's not integrated. So I'm not saying all these jobs are going to be instantly replaced, but there is just a shift. And so figuring out where that shift is will be.
Stacey, I was talking to a German and trying to hear and explain what's happening to retail in the U.S. and how we only have one bookstore left and one electronics store left. And I said, Amazon is going to bring down everything that can be commoditized into same-day delivery and Amazon delivery. And then the fresh, now they're attacking the only thing left, which is fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And when it pick stuff up. And Amazon is going to be the future of all retail.
So
Yeah.
Politicians at this point have chosen an easy kind of straw man to blame for the loss of jobs, which is international trade and offshoring.
And foreigners coming in.
I really don't see anybody saying the truth of the matter, which is that automation is going to cost far more jobs. Mm-hmm. And really the jobs it costs are are lower skilled jobs.
Yeah. Entry-level jobs.
Entry-level jobs.
Cashier. You know, truck driver.
A truck driver, that's a great job. One of the, you know, really well-paid, one of the few well-paid jobs that you don't need a college degree to do. And that those are going to go away. Those are going to go away first. So that's problem one. And I don't see anybody saying, well, and what would you say? Well, let's stop automation. I don't know what you would say.
That's the boogeyman around basic income.
Yeah, basic income, though, is a really bad idea.
I'm not, but this is Silicon Valley. People there are trying to push this, and politicians can't go against automation because yes, it's going to take our jobs away, but it's also going to make our goods incredibly cheap. And
that's what Mark Andreessen says.
He says,
well, but everything's going to be so cheap, but it's not infinitely cheap. It's not free.
We're still going to have to figure out what to do with people.
If you're Amazon, it is in your interest to maintain a large middle class that can buy goods, because if you become so efficient that you eliminate your customers' incomes, then it doesn't matter. So I think even companies like Amazon need to think about this. And of course, right now, the only groups that are thinking about it are unions.
Well, and it seems to me from a political point of view, if automation starts getting rid of, you know, millions of jobs, who are people going to look to sort of target as to blame for that? It's going to be Silicon Valley and technology companies.
And then the other blame piles on, Matthew. I think you're right. Then surveillance and privacy and taxes and all kinds of things pile on. And I think Silicon Valley is in for a rough ride going ahead, and they're not prepared for it. Look at the fake news debacle. They're hubristic as ever out here.
I mean, I do love the idea of, well, you'll only work at stuff you find interesting, that the robots will do all the unpleasant work, and people who don't have a higher skill set, who haven't been to college or haven't been trained in more advanced technologies, will just, have a basic income. They may not have the frills but they'll be able to survive. What's wrong? Actually, I should take a step back because I said that's a bad idea. Is it a bad idea? Maybe that's not such a bad. That sounds almost like a utopia. Why is it a bad idea?
What a bad idea.
Is a basic income a bad idea?
I actually don't think it's a bad idea at all. And it's funny, you can get people on the far left and you can get people sort of libertarians on the far right agreeing that basic income is a good idea. If you can't guarantee people sort of a shot at a reasonable job or living, then you have to give them something.
Here's the one concern I've read about a basic income. And I don't know enough about this, and this is, of course, a matter of debate. But when Obama's chief economist and chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors talked about this, he says, replacing our current anti-poverty programs, and that's the part I want you to pay attention to, with universal basic income would, in any realistic design, make the distribution of income worse, not better. Our tax and transfer system, in other words, entitlements and things, and poverty, anti-poverty programs, is largely targeted towards those in the lower half of the income distribution, which means it works to reduce both poverty and income inequality. Replacing part or all of that system with a universal cash grant would mean relatively less of the system was targeted toward those at the bottom, increasing income inequality because they replace everything from Head Start to food stamps with a check, to medical care with a check. And then it's your responsibility to pay for everything out of that. I don't know enough about it. Furman is the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors. He's dead set against this for that reason. And I would suggest reading more about it because I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's where that comes from.
Well, aren't they doing experiments right now in Canada? Is it Vancouver or Matthew? Somewhere in Canada, they're doing a basic income experiment for a couple of months or a year.
We should.
To see what happens.
It's kind of... the devil's in the details.
Matthew's talking, but he's not saying anything.
How many times has that happened to me?
I think if it replaces other things, your point is a good one. If it replaces other things that are valuable,
kind of has to.
But it doesn't. But it leaves people worse off as a result.
Right.
Then that's probably bad.
This strikes me as the typical Silicon Valley utopianism, which usually involves a lot of hand waving. Like, oh no, it's not a problem. Goods are going to be really cheap, and you give everybody a basic income, and it's utopia.
The government ends up buying all of our services for people. Yay!
Yeah, but where does the government's tax base comes from? Where?
This reminds me of, so the dystopian view would be that episode of Black Mirror where people who didn't have the means just provided power for people by biking.
Right.
So somewhere in the middle, maybe we can come up with something. I think about all the services we still need that involve people, and robots are never going to take over. Like, I think teaching, while you can augment that with, computers, I think children and people still need people around them. So elder care, I think, could be an option. Any service where you have to teach people things, I don't know. I mean...
Well, the hard part is that a lot of those jobs are relatively skilled in the sense that, cashier jobs and delivery truck driving jobs and loading and unloading warehouse jobs are great jobs for people who either can't get or can't afford to get, skills where they could get better jobs.
I think the debate around what kind of education you need for things is also something worth talking about going forward, because right now we have a very old set of thought processes, basically.
It's very simplistic and out of date. I agree with you.
And
that's why the political conversation right now is on loss of industrial jobs and offshoring, when really the prudent thing would be to look to the future, where it's really going to be about automation. And what do we do now? What kind of training? What kind of preparation? What kind of programs can we put in place? Because frankly, otherwise, if you have a large unemployed group of unemployed people.
Nobody wants that. No government benefits when you have a large group of unemployed people.
It's bad for business, bad for everybody.
Right. Yep. Education isn't just about the job skills. It's about understanding how to have a civil discussion in society, and that's what we're lacking right now.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about understanding the value of facts and the value of rationality.
So did you know? So anyway, I agree. I think this I don't know what the answers are, and this is why I brought this up. Kind of is what we need to think. We need to start preparing for this future, though, and that's what everybody seems to agree. And by the way, we do a lot of interviews on this kind of stuff on triangulation. One of the things, one of the books we interviewed, I can't remember who it was. Maybe you do, Karsten. Talked about the fact that it's not going to restrict itself to less skilled jobs. Lawyers and doctors are going to be out of work or reduced work because of automation as well. There's a, you know, the highlight from, it was a father and son who wrote this book. The highlight of it was that just that these more, like a lawyer, well, you won't have to do all the busy work. You can do the stuff that a computer can't do very well. But what we're seeing is computers can do more and more stuff pretty well. And I just like think there's fewer there's fewer jobs in every category, I guess.
But in the case of a doctor, it won't replace, but it augments. It makes diagnosis better. But I don't know that it's going to be more efficient.
Well, if you're a radiologist, let me put it this way: if you're a radiologist today, you should be thinking about what else you're going to do in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. What if you think about it from this? Right, so. When I talk to industrial internet, like about industrial IoT, one of the big things that they're thinking about is the centralization of expertise. And you're seeing this happen with doctors, with telemedicine, is you can now send data wherever you want. So maybe we're going to get pools of places where you have people who are really good at what the automation isn't. And maybe we can get to a place where you can really fine tune and get to things that otherwise people weren't able to do. And so maybe it's deeper, crazy, more esoteric surgeries, you know, that computers can't handle. I don't know. What I'd worry about, though, is when you can have those things anywhere, where are those things going to pool? And if you don't have access to broadband, you know, then you're out of that loop entirely. So this is tough.
I actually think that's a huge element, is a lot of the things that we're talking about, whether it's automation or sort of knowledge networks enabled by the internet, a lot of that stuff simply isn't available to people because of where they live. You know, they have something that amounts to dial-up access.
Well, and I think that, that's another reason there's a huge gulf between the urban elites and liberals and the rural disenfranchised. And boy, you see that gulf in this country, and it's just widened and widened and widened.
Well, in the election, I think
it highlighted that.
Reflected some of that.
Yeah. And it, and boy, that's as clear as crystal clear that that's happening, right? And it has happening.
We'll also see at a government level licensing requirements about people being in the mix. That for sure is going to happen. So, you know, we're never going to have a robot doing surgery without somebody present, and probably several someone's present, for a long time to come. And that's how the government's probably going to help ease some of this out. And, you know, there will be people who are like, oh, that's so unfair. It could be cheaper and better when, you know, if robots could do everything. So it'll be kind of an interesting, fun debate.
Well, and I can definitely see there's no way they're going to let massive amounts of tractor trailers drive across the country without human beings sitting in the cab
to
make
people
feel better.
What if you get better medicine because it's automated and it's cheaper and we can't afford it to have humans do it? What if there are fewer accidents because
robot trucks
are safer?
But if a robot kills you,
but
it's very different.
I think it's going to be increasingly difficult for regulations to enforce something that has such a high cost in other area. I don't know.
I hate to
think that government's going to protect us from automation.
It's less government and more like licensing bureaus and agencies.
Yeah.
Like,
or think about safety regulations. Like, think about the airplane, the sort of that industry. Pilots are needed for a relatively small portion of the average airplane flight.
It's still fewer pilot jobs, right?
many of them fall asleep during the flight because they're simply not necessary. Planes could easily take off and land themselves. But I don't think we're prepared to accept that for a whole bunch of reasons. So we still have human beings in the cockpit.
Stuff that I wish we were seeing more of this kind of conversation going on in the public forum.
And we've got a good segue if we want to take it.
Let's take it.
To Google Wings program, because that is delivery jobs, possibly.
What is the Google? Over. Wing, program. You mean Wing Marketplace?
Wing Marketplace. Sorry, I was... Yeah. There's an app that takes you to the airport here in Austin, since we don't have Uber and Lyft, that's called Wings. And so my brain just went, Wings!
You could get chicken wings from Google.
This is a Google drone delivery thing? Is that what this is?
Yes. Wing Marketplace. Is that what it's called? Not for chicken wings.
Not for chicken wings.
Maybe for chicken wings. I don't know.
Although that would be a good idea. Am I right?
You're looking at the wrong article. Here, Wall Street Journal, Google X plans Wing Marketplace. It gets me the wrong link every time. An online exchange for $6 drone deliveries for what the? See, this is why when people say, oh, well, this is years off. And then you read stuff like this. Oh, radiologists, we got another couple of decades. And then you read stuff like this. Yeah, this stuff's happening pretty fast. So drone deliveries. For $6, I don't understand. But now remember, we were talking about the Chipotle deliveries in Virginia Tech, which were discontinued, right? Starbucks pulled out of the negotiations because Starbucks wanted the customer data.
So of course they did. They're working with they've reportedly met with Domino's Pizza, Whole Foods, and other fast food chains to get the program. And
they
have been approved
for test flights, but only at a special location, right?
Yes.
So they haven't yet been approved for general drone deliveries. What's the interest in drone deliveries?
I was just going to ask that because I'm sitting here. I mean, I understand the logic, right? You know, UPS trucks are too big to get places. The air is relatively uncongested for now.
Every package has a drone attached to it. Mm-hmm.
But if you think about like sending a drone through a warehouse, it can pick up what it needs because it's tagged automatically. Because it's computerized, it can be scaled to massive deliveries, right? But yet, because it's small and lightweight, it can do it at a personalization. So you combine scale, yay, plus personalization, double yay. So I see why it's like intellectually appealing. But like, when you picture the world like this, it's not really appealing at all.
Well, what this is looking at is the continued trend towards the distribution of intelligence into every little small thing. Mm-hmm. And drone technology allows it to be mobile intelligence. And it's kind of like nanobots, right? The idea that you could have millions of tiny intelligent things all acting, avoiding running into stuff. And so you had millions of drones just, like you said, Stacey, flying into the factory, getting the thing and flying it to me. I guess that's more efficient, but it's kind of a sci-fi future.
I think it just sounds cool.
Delivering drugs in Haiti. Well, see, part of what we do is because it sounds cool, right? I feel like Sergey Brin's going, well, that'd be cool. Let's do that. So who was I talking? I was talking to somebody. Maybe now, Jeff, close your ears because you're at Google. I was talking to somebody who had a friend who worked at Google who said everybody's dispirited at Google because Ruth Porat, the new CFO, apparently Larry and Sergey are out smoking blunts. They're just kind of dialed out. And Ruth Porat's in charge, and she's been slashing everything, including, by the way, this drone project. In fact, this is exactly what it says. This article from Bloomberg Technology last month, the Project Wing is the latest Alphabet project to be target of financial restraint, a.k.a. Ruth Porat.
There do seem to be a lot of cuts.
And this person was very dispirited.
Well, Google was always the one that funded stuff that seemed futuristic and probably unmonetizable. And that's part of what we liked about it, I think, was that they were the ones who were willing to take on these... Right. Massive programs.
Go ahead, Jeff.
You're right, Matthew. Where else is there pure research going on?
Well, everywhere. We just don't talk about it. I'm sure Apple is doing a lot of pure research in a lot of interesting areas. Facebook clearly is. Mark Zuckerberg's building Jarvis in his house. You call that? That's
yeah, but Google always felt like the research and sort of making the world better or whatever. Maybe I'm just naive, but like that was part of what they were doing, not just trying to create something they could sell for a bunch of money.
According to this journal article, the reason the Wing project kind of got clipped is because they were aiming for 1,000 successful flights and they couldn't get without accident. They couldn't get past 300.
They kept running into trees and falling out of the sky and stuff. Yeah.
So really it wasn't Ruth Porat. It was a technology problem that clipped wings.
I think the drones, have you seen the pizza delivering drone? It's just a little cooler with wheels and it drives around neighborhoods and comes to your door. That seems way more realistic to me than things flying through the air and dropping pizzas. Like, why?
Well, imagine if you're trying to take off from SFO and you have to wait till 300 drones carrying pizzas are get out of the way. Forget
birds and drone.
Forget bird strikes.
Wasn't there a drone accident with a plane?
Was there? Has there been now?
I think there was one.
No, I think it was an almost, wasn't it?
I think there was.
Yeah, could have been.
All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about DeepMind. Ooh, as long as we're talking about deep things. But first, how about some deep sleep brought to you by Casper, the world's best mattress. Casper offers free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada of the best mattress ever. Made in the U.S. of A. Live the dream. It's the perfect mattress. The technology behind the Casper mattress is amazing. Time Magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. Fast Company Design Finalist 2015. Big Innovation Award winner 2016. Because these mattresses are made in the USA with some really sophisticated technology so that they breathe. Actually, I love... let me see if I can find... they talk about the technology here on this is the website, how they designed the mattress. They had the criterion that they used. See the design story. Yeah, here it is. So they were looking for a mattress. These are the factors: firmness, density, the factors they considered, rebound speed, airflow, transition temperature. If you've ever had a memory foam mattress, you know that they get hard when it's cold. It's weird. And odor, because nobody wants to smell latex. So they solved these. And I can tell you from experience, because I have a Casper mattress. I like it so much. I gave one to my son. Our nephew has one as well. These are great mattresses made in the United States. They did 1,000 different formulations of foam, 3,240 hours of testing, delivered 108 prototypes before they came out with the perfect mattress. An award-winning combination of latex, memory, and support foams, and combined in such a way that you get this amazing night's sleep with no springs, no coils. It has just the right give, just the right firmness. Look, here's the deal. You got to try it. And the beauty part of this, it comes in this great box, surprisingly small box, and you just open it up and whoosh, the mattress emerges, which makes it easy to get into the bedroom. Now, you might say, well, but what if I don't like it? Well, good news. You have 100 days to return it. If at any time in the first 100 days you don't like it, Casper sends along a courier who will take it off your hands and refund every penny. So there's no risk in getting a Casper mattress. We love our Casper, and I want you to try it for a great sleep. 100-night free trial awaits you, and we're going to get you $50 off. Your mattress purchase when you go to Casper, CASPER.com/twig, Casper.com/twig. Use the offer code TWIG at checkout to save $50 on any mattress from Casper. Terms and conditions do apply, though. Casper.com/twig. You shouldn't, if your mattress is more than 10 years old, it's time for a new one. You should not keep sleeping on it. People do not replace mattresses often enough. So I didn't realize this, but when Google acquired DeepMind, the artificial intelligence lab, they created a board, according to Business Insider, a mysterious AI ethics board. And earlier this week, DeepMind's co-founder Mustafa Suleiman was speaking at Disrupt, TechCrunch Disrupt in London, and he refused who said who's on the board. It's a secret. The ethics board is ongoing. It's something we have internally to oversee some of our efforts. We've tried other approaches. Most recently, we got together with Amazon, Facebook, IBM, Microsoft, and Google to start the partnership on AI. You know, we've often, you know, said, oh, Google's Skynet and blah, blah, blah. But I think even they are a little nervous. They've got an ethics board. Last year, he said he wanted to publish the names of the people who sit on the board, but for some reason pulled back.
What is the rationale for not making that
public? It's a secret. I don't know.
But why?
I don't know. See, that's what I wonder.
The benefits of making it public would be wonderful because you could actually say things like, hey, look at your board. It's all white men.
And that's probably why, right?
Exactly.
Right.
That has a very different effect on the types of algorithms and how you're training thing. I mean, how you think about ethics.
This John C. Havens, we interviewed about his book, Artificial Intelligence, Embracing Our Humanity to Maximize Machines, wrote on Medium. DeepMind, where's the AI ethics board? He said exactly that. Okay, great that you have an ethics board, but you've got to tell us, you know, who these people are so we understand what your guidelines are. You've got to reveal guidelines regarding ethical considerations.
What if Peter Thiel's on there?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No. I'm not going to go there.
So,
not today.
Thank you.
Not
thank
today.
You. Thank you. So he says, Googler, he says, I'm tired of being angry at Google. Here's my appeal. Googlers, please announce some specifics about the AI ethics board. Delight us all with the experts you've asked to be part of this groundbreaking group that aren't all on your board, Silicon Valley types or technocrats. Surprise us with your choices of multiracial, women heavy, globally represented voices that can spark a conversation about humanity and ethics. Because if all you got is a bunch of people reading science fiction, it ain't going to do it. Well, good point. I didn't even know they had a board. I'm glad to see they have a board, but it doesn't mean much if it's not.
Who should be on it?
Oh, Jeff, turn it into a positive. You know who'd be great? Just because I love his writing on AI and just the world, it's Ken Liu. He's a story. He's a writer. Ken, let's see. Is that how you say it? Spell his name? I'm trying to think. No.
Did we interview Ken? I think we did. It sounds familiar.
What does he do?
Ken, so L-I-U.
Yeah, Grace of Kings and the Paper Menagerie.
Hmm.
I think you're right. I think sometimes writers might be the right people.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he should be the only one, but he writes about this and he follows research very closely and then clearly is spinning it into these kind of narratives that put people at this core. And that's so essential. So
I think Nicholas Carr would be good.
Nick Carr would be great.
He would. Yeah.
I also think you want people, I think Stacey's instinct is right here. You want people from outside the field too. You want a clergy and
there you go.
Historian.
Let's get a Unitarian on that board.
Yeah. A Unitarian.
What are you laughing at my faith? I was brought up Unitarian. The thing I like about Unitarian is because the message, at least when they told me, is worship the God of your choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Unitarian, anything goes.
Anything goes.
It's the least religious religion.
That's good. That's for me, baby. I'm glad they have an ethics board. I'd like to know who's on it. I think you're right, Jeff. We can think about there's some people you would want on there. You'd want a Nelson Mandela. You'd want some people who are great humanitarians on that board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's the writer for Weapons of Math Destruction?
Kathy O'Neill would be great.
Kathy O'Neill.
Love
her. She'd be good for
We want Kathy O'Neill.
Larry Lessig.
Larry Lessig.
Dana Boyd.
Larry Lessig.
Dana Boyd. David Brin. Neal Stephenson. Now we can go on and on. There are lots of people who should be on that board. Margaret Atwood.
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
she'd be
I
great.
I like that a lot.
Wouldn't she be great? She's written a lot about these issues. She's thought about these issues.
Okay. We should have AI Ethics Board episode of Twig and just get some of these people in the room and we'll ask them questions.
That would be fascinating just to record, show a meeting of this group and what they're talking about and thinking.
But here's the thing, Leo. Actually, I don't think it's the membership that's the problem. I'll bet that there is discussion of capabilities that they just don't want out.
That would be scary.
Probably.
Because Google knows better than anybody what these things can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember when they said they weren't going to enable facial recognition, even though they could?
Right.
Sorry.
Well, and my complaint then was, well, government already has all that. Why can't we have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but government doesn't know how to implement a lot of these things. And the way that...
Thank God.
Sometimes the lack of competence is
yeah, it's good.
Case. So we had on Monday the most mind-boggling interview with the director of Jason Matheny of the IARPA, which is a government. It's like DARPA, but it's under the Director of National Intelligence. It's the internet. It's the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity. And if you look at the things they're investigating, it's all of that.
Frightening, I bet. Frightening.
It's in, well, what's, yeah, actually, I was kind of a little reassured because they were paying attention, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's automatic speech recognition in reverberant environments. In other words, speech recognition in less than favorable acoustic environments. They had this great thing, this challenge called Jedi Mind. Who can you trust? And what metrics would you apply to find out if somebody you're talking to is trustworthy? And what they do is they open it to researchers, scientists, universities. But if you didn't hear the interview, it was, wow. It was kind of the stuff that the government is investigating. And this is for pretty blue sky research. What Jason Matheny said is this is high risk, high reward investigations. High risk, high payoff research is very, very interesting. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the things our government even is one of the what made me think of this is the Janus program, facial recognition under real world conditions of off pose, low quality, obstructed images.
Oh, so would people are wearing the we saw the videos, was it two weeks ago?
Those reflective sunglasses, yeah.
Yes. You could put that into the snap goggles or snap glasses.
We actually, Colleen was going to make this for us in the studio because people would come into the studio and be on camera and they didn't want to. And so we were going to have hanging on the hooks a little collar you could put on that had infrared light. So they're invisible to humans, but they would blast the cameras and you would look like a glowing head. Floating in the studio.
Nice.
I know. I thought that was a great idea.
That is.
Why didn't you build it?
She had other things to do, I guess. And now she's working. Now she's working at Facebook, where she is like one of the most important people over there in blue sky research. She's doing some amazing
stuff. Facebook now? I didn't know when
she went to Google.
I knew that.
And she's been at Facebook for a couple of years. Ooh, I am told that she's the woman who designed Facebook's 360-degree camera. She's an expert in video streaming, which I might say she learned from us here at Twit.
Yeah.
No, not at all. In fact, we benefited more from her. How about IARPA's OSI program, automated tools that provide early warning of societal instability and disease outbreaks more than a week earlier than traditional methods?
So Twitter.
How about this, the ACE program, crowdsourcing to reduce the error of geopolitical forecasts by more than 50%. Turns out the wisdom of the crowds ain't so bad.
Did you see DNA to face?
What's that?
They're seeking information on using genetic information to predict facial structure.
Ah.
So if you have someone's DNA, you could theoretically predict what they look like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
It's a brave new world.
I just saw some fascinating research here that's public. So I'm talking about for the Gina Davis Institute about time on camera and time speaking men versus women.
Oh, dear.
Major entertainment.
Oh, dear.
And it's exactly what you expect.
Sorry, Stacey.
And Stacey will know well how often men interrupt. And I'm sorry, Stacey, every time I do it, it's a reflex, and I apologize.
He interrupts me, too, so.
Well, that's for a different reason, Matthew.
Sorry, Stace.
Entirely different. So anyway, but to watch the representation of the facial recognition go by, they had a scene from My Big Greek Wedding, and the number of faces that, and it's figuring out which is male and which is female, forget LGBTQI, but it's just fascinating to see what this stuff can do on the fly.
I was actually thinking this morning that I wish that my Amazon Echo would listen to me and my wife talking, and at the end of the day, say how many words she spoke and how many words I got in edgewise.
Do you want to know? I think it's the opposite. You know, Leo, I'll bet it's the opposite.
At home, it's the complete opposite.
We men think that we, you know, no.
Yes, dear.
Right, Stacey?
Yeah, the stats are hilarious.
So Stacey like men. A word.
I'm just going to let y'all talk. The last time I said anything about women, I actually received some of the negative attention that Leo is so...
Welcome to the club.
I was told, you guys.
I was told that I mansplained you on Sunday. Did I mansplain you at some point?
It's possible. I get mansplained a lot.
I'm sorry.
I don't...
By definition, if you explain something, you did.
I'm a man, and I explained
well,
it.
Well, no.
Okay. No, I'm just kidding.
I try not to be condescending. I think mansplaining implies, you know, some patronizing.
But the study I saw...
Oh, honey, you just don't understand. Let me explain it to you.
Oh, I would have stopped you there.
I think you would have.
Yes.
If a woman speaks more than, I think it's 23%, men who are surveyed believe that she hogged the conversation.
Oh, jeez.
That is so true. Yes. That's why I don't, like, sometimes I just shut up. I'm like, nope, not worth it. And it's self-censoring.
Don't do that here.
Yeah, don't do that. Just interrupt.
We want you to talk twice as much.
Just cut Jeff off.
I could never do
off.
It. One, hey. You guys actually have good things to say. So, yay. And two, the more I talk, the more negative feedback I get.
Not from us, but from the outside world.
Who are like, either you don't know that or you talk too much. And the more likely I am to say something that people don't want to hear, which is, again, me self-censoring. Yay. Wow, this went in a weird direction. Like, let's take it away from
just them. Ignore them. Yeah. Just ignore them. Did you know that you can now tweet emoji at Google and get directions to tacos?
We're talking real progress.
I am so old. That's when I saw that story, I was like, dear God, I am old.
That's progress.
This is Devendra Harder, our writing and gadget. I hope you would explain this to me. So you tweet a taco emoji at Google, and then Google will respond. I got to try this. Apparently, it understands 200 emojis. Look at this. So Devendra tweeted a eggplant to Google, which is the first thing I would do.
And the first thing?
Yeah, really? Well, just to see what...
Okay, all right.
And, well, Devendra and I apparently think alike. Devendra, you were looking for Baba Ganoush recipes, right? Here's a few.
Wow.
Yes!
Wow.
I think that's what you should do, Stacey.
And now there's a dumpling eggplants? Emoji, thanks to...
Yes,
Jennifer Ying Lee.
Yeah, and Jennifer Lee. Then Devendra got complicated. He tweeted a poop emoji at it, and Google said, "Need a breath of fresh air."
Well, that's fair.
Well, yes, taco.
Isn't the eggplant emoji used for to represent other things as well? Okay,
it is. Okay. Yes,
sorry.
So this is where having guys on your development team, because I probably wouldn't have thought about that for at least like a while. So there you go.
You see,
it matters.
See, you do need men on your team, don't you?
Exactly.
See, yeah. There you go. And they need to talk.
I wouldn't have gone there for a while.
So I heard another great diversity story today.
Yes.
It's public. So when YouTube started, who's right? Is anybody here left-handed?
Yes. Moi.
Okay, so Matthew, you're right-handed. Stacey, you're right-handed.
I'm right-handed.
So Stacey, take your phone and show how you rotate your camera in your right hand to be able to watch horizontal video.
Okay.
I won't poison the well yet.
Yeah.
All right. I'm horizontal video.
So you do it in your right hand.
She does it. She does it counterclockwise, as do I.
Now, Leo, how do you do
counterclockwise? I go like this.
You do? Oh, you see, they found that left-handed people did it this way.
Oh, you know what? This is more disinformation about our sinister friends.
Fake news. Fake news.
Fake.
No, it's funny. So they found that they had users who were looking, the video was coming in upside down, and they didn't know why, because the whole team was right-handed. Nobody thought to do
okay.
it this way.
Oh, wow. I am influenced by where the home button would be on a
me
pixel.
Too.
So yes. I always try to get that to the right. Apple, yeah, me too. Having been trained by Apple.
Oh, that's okay. That's right.
So that is interesting, though.
It is, isn't it? Diversity of another
right-handed and left-handed, and people with no hands.
But it just shows you. Yeah, we have to kind of think outside the box, and this is a big problem in Silicon Valley. It's very much a bubble.
Huge problem.
Yeah.
Huge.
And as a white male, I feel I'm underrepresented.
Well, wasn't it Snapchat? They did filters, and they came out with these
racist filters. Yeah.
Filters. Yeah. And how could that have gotten all the way through meetings and approvals? Presumably they do those things. And no one said, wait a second.
Stacey, you have the Eero.
I have something else.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Oh, you've got the loom. Those are the plumes.
These are the plumes. This is a non-FCC approved one, so I can't sell it.
Is it Powerline or?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
So the cool thing here, or Leo, do you want to do it?
No, you're the plumer.
So the cool thing about
I'm going to just shut up from now on and let Stacey talk.
No, this is your show, man. I'm a newcomer. So this is a Wi-Fi router. Comes in pack of six. And what's cool about this is most Wi-Fi routers do, their brains are in the box along with the brains that handle the routing and then also the radios. Plume has the brains in the cloud and only the radios in these things. So right here, you plug this bottom port into your modem.
Only one has to be plugged in, though, right?
Only one. Okay. And then you plug it into an outlet. And then the rest of these, you just shove in to outlets around your house.
But you're supposed to have one in every single room you'd want Wi-Fi.
Yes. But a six-pack is, what, $330?
Yeah, they're $75 each. It's not expensive.
It's kind of expensive. I've got seven in my house, and it's a 2,500-square-foot house. And the cool thing is, because the brains are in the cloud, it learns. So I was going to actually tell you about how they work, but mine hasn't been installed long enough to actually start performance testing yet. What it does is it's gathering data on the types of devices I have, where things are being used and how things move around my household. And it's going to start to optimize for that, which is really cool. I think
that is cool.
I have been using the Eero with great result. I ordered the Google, and that's supposed to come pretty soon. We're going to do a review of the Orbi, which is Netgear's Google Eero, and maybe Plume 2 with Dave Hamilton on Saturday on the new Screensavers.
Okay,
I feel like the Plume is the most interesting. All of them, by the way, claim they're sending information back to the home office for analysis, right?
Well, they all do. So Eero just boosted some of their features based on some of the analysis that they had done. But this is interesting because it's supposed to be real time. And one of the issues with Eero's and traditional mesh networks is that as you do hops, you're decreasing your throughput. And so as you're hopping from hub to hub, so mesh to mesh, unless you've got it plugged into a LAN. So with Plume, though, they say that you don't have those because they will move from different channels. And this is really techie, so I'm sorry.
Well, get techie, please.
So we'll see how it works. I mean, I'm going to start doing performance testing, and I can report back next week, but you have a show on it, too, so you may not.
No, I want to get you. I'm very interested. I feel, by the way, Eero also says we're better than just Wi-Fi extenders because as you get, you know, that those do attenuate the signal as you go down the line. And so Eero also makes similar claims.
I have I've used an, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, now that I talked to the CEO of Plume about Eero, and I've talked to Eero about Plume, and they both make kind of contradictory claims about each other for what it's worth.
Well, they're in deep competition with one another.
Yes, they are. Okay, Matthew, sorry.
I spent a bunch of money for a range extender for my house, and I don't know if I'm doing something wrong, but my devices, like particularly iPhones and iPads, seem to have a problem. They drop the network. They drop. They can't reconnect automatically for some reason.
As you move around, or as you stay still?
What's that?
As you move around or as you stay still?
No, just staying still. And this extender, I tried renaming the networks, the extended versions. I tried using the same name. I don't know if it's a problem with this extender or if it's a problem with Apple Wi-Fi.
So anyway, I know that iPhones are sticky from a Wi-Fi perspective. So they tend to pop onto one network in one access point and try to stay there as long as possible. So a lot of times if you're moving, that can be an issue. But if it's popped onto one and it's not the closest one, then you might still be getting issues, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's weird.
Do you count bathrooms as rooms?
No, you
but
can what still...
It, but don't you want to use the... Well...
That's no.
Sure you do.
So
sure
actually, do. I have
I'm trying
Google
to figure out how many plumes how many plumes I'd need. I think I need like 9 or 10.
So I've got... Okay. I've got my house, which is a garage, the first floor, which is an open floor plan that's really big, and then the second floor, and then a rooftop deck. And I have Wi-Fi requirements for all of my floors. So because Wi-Fi signals travel down easily compared to up,
Oh, so you should always put them high.
Yeah.
Oh.
They're like heat. I don't know why that is.
I had no idea, Stacey. That is the factoid of the day.
I was just asking this question this morning because I had bought two more Eero's, so I have five now, and I put it on the low shelf of the bookshelf, and I thought, I bet it'd be better on the high shelf, just intuitively, because I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, I promised I wouldn't make big gestures because my sink
heat rises.
You got to stop reading the Twitter. Now you know why I don't like the Twitter. You're reading too much of the Twitter and people giving you bad ideas. It's like if you get I'm sorry, I turned into O-Doctor for a moment. It's like
what just happened? No, I just saw myself on the screen. I went back to the screen and I'm like, oh, I'm so far behind how I'm talking.
No, do not take feedback.
I don't accept your feedback.
Be yourself.
So up there, let's see. So there's one on the roof. There, I put one in my study because there's all this gear.
One on the roof?
Yes, I have a cabinet in the roof where I have a router, and because I've got Sonos on the roof, plus I've got Wi-Fi.
Is there anything? I mean, is there a room up there, or just on the roof?
It's a rooftop deck. So
it's a deck.
Yeah.
Leo.
Okay. I'm sorry. I've got a little putt-putt green up there. Yeah, it's nice.
You have a putting green on your roof.
Is there a tiki bar?
There is not a tiki bar. Oh,
okay. What is the view? Do you see Lake Austin from where you sit?
I see like the bridge over the 360 bridge in the lake. It's nice. And
do you have a drone launching pad?
I could. Still though, even though from there I don't get great digital TV signals.
Do you need a plume for your guest room?
So I put one in my guest room. You know, as I test, I'm going to see how that works. I definitely need one in my garage, though. Even though the Wi-Fi signal travels down because the Tesla needs it, I've got the MyQ garage door opener, and then I have a...
I need like 12.
Yeah.
So I've got 7. And so far, we haven't encountered much drama. Although, when I created the network... I gave it the wrong SSID. And then I realized like everything failed. So I had a hard time getting my Sonos and my Philips Hue lights back online for a little bit after I switched
networks.
Because
you changed SSIDs or because what they're used
I changed it back. It was very easy to change the SSID back. Cause obviously if your SSID is wrong from all of your connected devices, none of them are going to hop on. Mm-hmm. But once I changed it back, I think, is it DCHP? I can't, I can never remember that.
Yeah.
DHCP. I think all of those leases had to reset, and they hadn't yet. So I had to reboot just about everything.
That's kind of normal. Yeah.
Half of my devices.
So I'm going to get 12 of them.
Jeebus. I would start less.
Well, what I should really do is wait till I hear from you. So so you're using, even though it hasn't done the intelligence thing yet, is it working okay?
Yeah, it's working fine. Like, for example, don't hate me. This is actually maybe why I'm late. And I just realized I'm on the Wi-Fi and not my.
That's exactly why you're late.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's because I am.
It's okay. By the way, this is the one person in this group that doesn't need any of this because she's got Ethernet in every room of her house.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But this is actually a great test because this one, I guess I could plug it into my LAN in all my rooms, but this is one of the first times I'm going to be working without having the LAN backup. So it should be fun. I'll see what everyone else's Wi-Fi is like.
I'm going to wait and see. So you have the Eero. Have you tried any of the others of these?
I have the Almond 3, so which is a mesh. It's not a great mesh so far, but yes, I have that. I could try the Orbeez if you want me to try the Orbeez.
Oh, I know why I can't use the Loom. A plume.
Why?
Because I need to also connect to a switch for hardwired Ethernet.
So I have a switch for hardwired Ethernet I have three switches. So the one up here, let's see if I can print something actually.
Because each of those plumes has one Ethernet jack.
Yes. Mm.
So what I need is one with like the Eero or the Google that has at least two Ethernet jacks so that I can connect to my router modem and then to a switch, to a big Ethernet switch so I can get other hardwired Ethernet in there.
How do you do that? That's a good question. Everything's working, so how did I do it?
I guess you could go to another plume and plug into that, but that's going to be Wi-Fi. I don't want any Wi-Fi. See, this is so all the 4K stuff. I want to have hardwired right into the wall for best.
So it must be going through my actual modem instead of my router. No,
you may have a modem that has multiple Ethernet jacks. In which case,
I do. Wait a second. What is the architecture? My hub.
That means your modem is probably doing routing. In which case, you want to make the plumes bridge. Can you do that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't. That is an option.
Because otherwise, you'll have double NAT. You don't want double.
You don't want that.
I don't have that.
No. Too many NAT.
Double NAT.
Double NAT. No.
Done.
It's amazing how we've all had to become network nerds.
Yeah,
it's sad.
I find it amazing that it's probably 15 years since we had ubiquitous connectivity and Wi-Fi and whatnot, and we still have problems where you talk to a network guy and you're like, "Well, then this happened. Why do you think that happened? I don't know."
Oh, all the time. the time. Like in fact, this was kind of an eye opener when I realized how much trial and error is involved in this stuff. Well, let's see what happens.
That's huge. Yeah. I went on a support forum and there were a bunch of network engineers, like IT guys.
Guessing.
This is their job.
They're guessing.
And one guy said, I tried everything. I still can't figure it out.
That's because it's hardware and wires. I mean,
I don't know
interference
why
in radios.
It's because networking is very complicated, is really why.
It is.
Well, so I think we're making progress, and I think the plume is good. I decided not to pull the trigger. I'm going to wait till your review, okay?
Wait until, I'll figure out my actual network.
I'm very
technology.
Happy with the Eero.
So that had the very detailed review?
The Verge, I think. Tape. And the Verge, by the way, which was reviewing the Google Wi-Fi, and by the way, Dan Seifert, who did it, is very good. I mean, trust Dan implicitly. He had a different result than remember Google's announced that in their independent survey that the Google device had the best throughput. Dan's result was not the same. He said, actually, the fastest device that he tried was the Orbeez of all things, the Netgear.
The Wirecutter actually named the Orbeez the best mesh networking router too.
Interesting.
Believe it or not. So
here's the graph. Actually, if you look at the graph, the light red is download, the dark red is upload, and the brown is ping. And in all of the graphs, the leftmost bar is the Google Wi-Fi, the middle one is the Eero, and the right one's the Orbi. So when you were nearby, you know, you're all in the same room, they're all roughly equal. But as you get farther away, the Orbi really starts to outpace in speed and download speed both the Eero and Google Wi-Fi. And in his test, the Eero and Google Wi-Fi were pretty darn close. There was only one test where the Wi-Fi was significantly faster. But the Orbi.
Why is Orbi so much better?
It could be that Netgear's been doing Wi-Fi for freaking ever, and they finally just decided to get on this bandwagon. And when they did, boom, they did a good job.
Yeah. So anyway, Plume seems like it could be the best potentially because you've got a radio in every room.
And if it actually learns, that would be.
It does. Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. Next week, you guys. Next week.
Okay.
My bad for not... When I set it up, I was like, oh, cool. And then I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be in time. I suck.
And the Plume looks like it's less expensive until you realize how many you need. It's only 75 bucks per unit, but then you need
a
whole lot of
them. They also require an outlet. So
right.
Think about that. If you don't have... Like, I have tons of spare outlets running around because we went crazy when we designed our house.
I'll just bet you do.
I'm like, the wall where I knew I was putting my desk has three plus Ethernet on both sides. So yes, most people probably did not have that luxury, and they may want to think about the fact that they're going to have to use an outlet.
Here's I remember the days of trying to do the extender through the electrical system. Those were the worst systems. Mm-hmm.
I tried that. They were the worst. And actually, they got better. Power line is better nowadays, but. There's a lot of loss.
I couldn't get it working at all. I'm in a room on top of the garage. I tried power line networking. I tried an extender. And finally, believe it or not, I ran an Ethernet cable out the window downstairs from the router and up across the roof and through the window of my office.
I should mention, I forgot to mention, I apologize. The Eero is a sponsor. So just for your own disclaimer purposes. Got to mention that. Modo. I'm very intrigued by this. Lenovo's announced that they're going to do a Modo mod a month.
What?
A Modo mod a month. Those are the snap-on backs for the Moto Zs, or I'll do this in deference to Matthew, Moto Z, Moto Z Force, and the Moto Z Play. And they plan to do a whole bunch of mods, and these are third parties. There's a Kate Spade mod. There's going to be all sorts of mods from all sorts of groups. So that's kind of
just design or mods functionality.
Well, there's a Hasselblad camera back, which I've heard is only mediocre. There's a Mophie mod, which is a battery mod. Incipio makes a docking station that clips into your car. All sorts of things, game controls, and more.
You're going to need a backpack to carry around all the mods.
What is the Kate Spade one? It doesn't do anything, but it looks great. I don't know. They don't say.
It looks expensive.
Yeah, it looks expensive.
Yeah.
Kate Spade's been very involved. She's, of course, a women's fashion designer. She's been very involved in cases and phones for a while now. A breathalyzer mod? Color sensors for the blind? These are potential ideas. Additional storage. That's kind of an interesting idea. A lot of people really like these. The Moto Z, the battery life of the Moto Z Play is very good, and it's a $400 phone. Well, as a result, it's thick and heavy. But and then, of course, you snap on these backs. The backs snap on magnetically.
Ooh, I love magnets.
That's kind of cool.
But this is a speaker back if you're looking at the video.
So this is why I was excited. Remember the what
you
was
like Project Ara, which got
thank you. I was like,
killed.
It's not Arlo. It's
Arlo. Project Arlo, the Thanksgiving project. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think this is kind of funny. Anything with magnets, because snapping magnets together is just so satisfying.
You should have a Pixel C. The Pixel C magnet's the best.
What?
The Pixel C.
Oh, yeah, the way that keyboard, you pry it off the tablet. Is that, that's the Google tablet. By the way, I keep hearing rumors there's going to be another Google tablets, Pixel tablets soon.
There should be.
The C just wasn't quite it. I would love that.
I do love it, though, yeah.
Yeah. How are you feeling about the Pixel now?
I'm liking the Pixel a lot.
Better and better and better, right?
Oh, yeah. So the horror story for me to tell is that on my Pixel laptop, it finally came out for the version for Android apps. You can guess where this is going to go. You can guess.
It doesn't work on yours because you have the 2014 model.
No. I have the new one.
No, his accounts.
Oh, no.
I win. Yeah.
You win, Stacey.
So because it's G-spot, I have to go through unbelievable effort to approve. I have to approve the whole organization. Then I had to create an organization and put myself in it. I got three people on this G-Suite. And then I had to approve that and go through all these levels of approval. When I did all that, then you have to approve every single app for the organization. There's no way to give me as the administrator and user the opportunity to just download a damned app. No, I have to go approve the individual app and then force its install on my laptop to get it to use. It is un-effing believable.
Good times.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
Here endeth the weekly driver's rant.
Slash rant.
Les Moonves is at it again. Man, somebody's got a... This guy is the... I guess Rupert Murdoch used to kind of let slip a lot of stuff. Les has taken over. He's the head of CBS. He has apparently confirmed accidentally that CBS has done a deal with YouTube, which confirms the supposition that YouTube is doing a TV package, an over-the-top TV package, rumored to be called Unplugged. On Monday, Moonves was speaking at the UBS Global Media and Communications Conference and said, well, yeah, we've made a deal with YouTube. Then he said, well, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Oops. Thanks, Les.
Well, never mind.
We knew that was happening anyway.
Yeah. CBS, I'm trying to think, is CBS, where else is CBS TV seen?
The interesting thing, I actually wrote about this when there was a rumor that CBS was involved. CBS has been notorious in the past for not doing these types of deals.
Yeah, they're not on DirecTV now.
Right. And at one point, I think it was Apple's venture, Moonves basically came out and said they weren't going to pay us enough, so we told them to F off. The fact that they are participating with YouTube's is interesting to me because they've kind of been the holdout in lots of these streaming services.
CBS also owns Showtime and CNET. apparently have a deal with PlayStation View because you can get Showtime on PlayStation View, but you can't get it on Hulu or can you get it on Hulu? I don't know.
You can buy it Showtime. You can buy Showtime on Amazon Prime as standalone channel.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So interesting.
Is Homeland on Showtime?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's the big thing that PlayStation's advertising is Homeland. Like that's the reason you would want to get it.
I should note that Les is also the guy who said Donald Trump is terrible for America, but he's great for CBS.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very famously. I think we're actually starting to see the logjam break in over-the-top TV subscriptions. That we're getting closer and closer to a time when you can get all your TV over the internet.
Although you will pay the same amount as you paid for your cable. More. So I think we have found that medium point.
Yeah. And that's probably why it's all coming together. Mm-hmm. Although I think cable is right to worry that their grip is going to be weakened once content creators can go directly or can find other avenues to go directly to consumers. the tight monopolistic grip that cable has had on these guys. I mean, you know, people have been very reluctant to do deals with anybody else because they don't want to make the cable companies mad. Well, as that slips, I think that really it's almost like the cue ball hitting the rack on the beginning of a pool game. Everything starts to scatter and lots of things can happen now.
Yeah, I think we're at or close to that tipping point. I mean, if you look even at Netflix and Amazon Prime Video, they're cutting content deals directly with creators. Lots of those deals are probably going to be as lucrative or more lucrative. So I think there's probably lots of opportunity for those alternate OTT providers to go direct.
Some great quotes from Edward Snowden. He spoke extensively to Katie Couric, who flew to Moscow to talk to him, and to a magazine called Turning Points. This is from the New York Times quoting Turning Points. Actually, it's a discussion between Stephen Erlanger, who's the Times London bureau chief, and Edward Snowden. And, of course, one of the reasons I think we're seeing a lot of Snowden is because the drumbeat is ramping up for the president to pardon him. He only has about a month and a half left to do so if he's going to. I think the general consensus is at this point that it is unlikely.
I wish he would.
I wish he would, too. And Snowden makes a strong case for why he should be pardoned. He said, I never published a single document on my own. I partnered with news outlets. This is why we have a free press and democracy. The government has many great powers, but it is the press that is charged with determining what information is truly within the public interest to know. And he said, you know, part of the reason he hasn't turned himself in, Daniel Ellsberg turned himself in so that there would be a trial and so forth. Daniel Ellsberg is the leaker of the Pentagon Papers back in the 70s. He said, Ellsberg himself has argued that I made the right decision not to present myself to the court because things have changed so much since the 70s. The law today, and this is true and it's sad, does not allow you to make a defense against Espionage Act charges in front of a jury. I am legally prohibited from even speaking to the jury about my motivation. Can there be a fair trial when you can't put forward a defense? At the sentencing phase, you can express to the judge why you did what you did, but that's not democratic. The jury system was created so you can discuss with your peers what you did and why you did it and let them decide. And I completely agree with him. And the Espionage Act.
Look what happened to Chelsea Manning. That doesn't
just get railroaded. So
The Obama administration has been terrible for freedom of the press access, and whistleblowers.
Agreed.
So
yeah, they've been one of the biggest, most secret, the one that's cracked down the most on freedom of information.
So, yeah, does not look good. Sadly. Sad noise.
Being patriotic, Snowden wraps up, being patriotic doesn't simply mean agreeing with your government. Being willing to disagree, particularly in a risky manner, is actually what we need more of today when we have this incredible, often fact-free environment where politicians can make claims and then they're reported as truth. How do we actually steer democracy? If we have the facts, we can help facilitate democracy, and this is my role. So he's unchastened. And I don't blame him.
Well, he's right about the news environment.
Yeah. Google fixed go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and his entire life has been ripped apart. So he better be. I mean, I can't imagine second guessing that. That would be just terrible blow to your self-esteem.
Times asked him about that, and he said, well, I'm kind of an indoor cat. I'm fine. Oh, this was an interesting website. I'm going to save that maybe for my pick. PewDiePie.
I can't figure this one out.
PewDiePie says YouTube is killing him because he's white.
Yeah.
PewDiePie is complaining because viewership of his, the number one YouTuber, viewership is down. He says YouTube has changed its algorithm so that fewer people see his videos. This has led to his popularity falling, he said in a video.
How about they're just sick of your shtick?
Maybe they're just sick of your shtick. The problem might be that he is white, he said in the same rant.
That's offensive.
I'm white. Can I make that comment? But I do think that's a problem. It's more than offensive. It's unbelievable.
Jeez.
And then and then he says, he claims YouTube wants to put someone else on the top of the site. Someone extremely, this is a quote, someone extremely cancerous. And this article from the UK, from the Independent in the UK, thinks it might be Lily Singh, who's a Canadian YouTuber with an Indian. Oh, no, he said it. Lily Singh. He said it. Lily Singh, yeah. A Canadian YouTuber with Indian heritage. OMG.
So I mentioned this online, and I had a number of people respond to me saying he's just trolling. Like, PewDiePie does this apparently routinely. He doesn't actually think that, and that's not why he is talking about deleting his channel. A lot of it is just attention-seeking behavior, and he knows that if he says something dramatic, it'll get picked up.
It seems to be the excuse for a lot of bad behavior these days.
Yeah, true.
Oh, he's just attention-seeking. He's just trolling. He doesn't mean it.
That doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You said it. Doesn't matter if you meant it. And if his numbers are down, I think PewDiePie, you need to look in the mirror. Criminally. Yep. The problem, I mean, this happens to everybody. This is called being, you know, this is popularity. It rises and falls.
And he had a much longer run than anybody would have ever guessed.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's just because we're old and we don't understand what the kids watch.
That's true.
We watch Homeland. Too, so. We don't.
Yeah. We're into that other stuff. Congratulations to our friend Anil Dash, Gina Trapani's former partner at ThinkUp. He is now the new CEO of Fall Creek Software, the software startup created by Joel Spolsky. I didn't realize this, but they kind of spun off Trello and Stack Overflow, two big creations. But Fog Creek still does a developer tool called FogBugs, and its new project will be relaunched under Anil Dash this week. GoMix, the easiest way to build the app or bot of your dreams. So congratulations, Anil. Love Anil. Mm-hmm. He's really widely regarded everywhere, I think. Anybody who knows him knows what a great guy he is.
He's spectacular.
And he and Gina...
Go
ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, he's a genuinely nice fellow, yes. And then he also does so much work for advocating for diversity in tech and just different, like, being thoughtful about how you build your tech.
Yep. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been a part of so many other amazing things.
Six
too,
Apart,
like,
right?
TypePad, yeah.
TypePad. That's where I met him, I think, was when I first started using TypePad.
There were a lot of smart people there. I spent the Monday at Facebook and got to see Andrew Anker, who's now in charge of news products there, and he was Six Apart. There were some really good people at Six Apart way back in the day.
Yeah.
They came out of Petaluma, you know.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah. Hmm. TypePad.
The founders, what's her name?
Yeah.
Mina.
Trot and Mina.
Whatever happened to?
Good question.
Yeah, good question. I used TypePad for years.
Feature on the Twit network somewhere. So whatever happened to?
Well, you know, there's this thing called Wikipedia.
Yeah,
there is.
There's Mina Trot, Ben and Mina Trot. I think Ben wrote the original TypePad software. I used it when it was still in beta. And, I guess they're no longer together.
Oh,
no.
Ex-husband, it says. They started in 2001. She started blogging at dollarshort.org, which is a great site name.
It's still her Twitter handle.
Dollar Short is awesome. She's doing a sewing blog, I guess, or maybe she was, and it stops at 2012. We don't know.
Ooh.
I hope she made. Yeah, I hope she and Ben made so much money. They've just retired. That would be my hope.
That would be nice.
Yeah, they were the sweetest people. I really liked them.
Well, they sold the company to Say Media, I think it was, and then it shut it down. It was some sort of dodgy.
Remember, they did Vox, which was kind of that was kind of their easy to use blogging platform. Six Apart purchased Live Journal. Wow, I didn't realize that. They sold that at a profit. Then they started Vox, which I used also. I used all their products. Then same media bought him in 2010.
Wasn't it TypePad, I think, launching a for pay version that helped jumpstart WordPress?
Maybe that's the case.
Well, it was more than that. Yeah, it was. It's actually, I find, a fascinating story. So movable type.
That's what I used, movable type. That's what I used.
Movable type. Movable type had its platform, and then it wanted to have a hosted service. And so they enabled the platform to be licensed, but they limited that license so that you couldn't compete too much with the movable type hosting platform. And all the hosts said, no, along comes WordPress. And WordPress says, no. We're going to make open source the underlying code. We're going to build the first for-profit on top of that. And they got VC funding for this entirely new model to do that because they didn't own the IP. The IP was all in the .org. The brand is now owned by the .org. And it was wildly more successful because it enabled scale. And everybody used movable type. And that hurt TypePad and SixPart.
We had Ben and Mina. I'm looking at my blog because I ran a movable type blog. It was one of the first platforms I used. We had them on the screensavers in 2002. Way back when.
Yeah, I used Blogger first. It's amazing that Blogger is still around, by the way. And then used movable type, and then used WordPress.
I think my first blogging program was a program called Gray Matter.
Gray Matter. That was great.
Noah had some health issues, as I remember. Noah Gray.
It was great, though.
So I started doing that in 2000. And he stopped maintaining it in 2002, and I think that's when I moved to movable type. And both these, I was hosting it. And then TypePad was a hosted solution.
Yeah.
I think I moved.
I did exactly the same thing.
I got
first
the
Gray Matter, then movable type.
Gray Matter was so cool.
Do you know where Six Apart came from, the name?
No.
Ben and Mina's birthdays were 6 days apart.
Oh, that's cute. That's awesome. I'm on Squarespace. They're a sponsor. I'm happy, but I'm always looking for. I would love to host. What's the best blogging software these days? I would like to host it myself, and I
think WordPress is still the best.
WordPress is the king, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm still using WordPress.
Are you self-hosted?
Yes.
You're not on WordPress.com. You have your own.
No, I'm not. Server. I have two different hosts. I just was making sure that was true.
Remember when people blogged and stuff? That was great.
Yeah.
I try to blog at least now 2 or 3 times a year.
I'm so ruined. I'm ruined.
Yeah.
I used to blog 5 times a day.
I know.
Yeah. Me too. Me too.
Yeah. So oh, no way, Matthew. No way.
What? I did.
Are you calling him out?
I'm calling him out as a former Matthew editor and colleague. I'm like 2 posts a day.
Stacy believes I am incapable of writing anything shorter than like 800 words.
Which is mostly true. Yeah.
Your 20-inch columns though. Twice a day.
I did do a lot of shorter posts, and now I just tweet that stuff. Like I used to do blog posts that were, you know, a paragraph, but.
I guess I used Blogger.
I used Blogger.
Maybe I did use Blogger first. What's nice is I've been able to import all the posts, the old posts, to my Squarespace blog. So I have all these old posts. I don't think any of the imagery survived.
Yeah.
But
that's often a problem.
Yeah. But that's okay. I can live with that.
I called my original, so at the blog I started right after 9/11, I called it World War III.
Wow. That, in some ways, that's why I'd like to still have all of this stuff, because it really is your history, your life history.
Yeah.
I did something. I started at GigaOM, which used WordPress. I hosted the VIP, but it would often swallow posts and not give them back, or other things would happen. And so I started writing in my own hosted version of WordPress, and then cutting and pasting it over to the GigaOM version. And I do that at Fortune now too, so I have a copy of everything I've written.
Nice. When did you first start blogging? Let's get our blog birthdays, everybody.
I think it was 2000 and two or three, but I don't know that I called it blogging. I was keeping track of links and stuff. In fact,
well, that's what
I had a blog.
It was a link roll. That's what blogging was originally, right?
So I had a blog, if you want to call it that, or I had a site in 95, I think it was 94 or 95. And I just kept track of links, interesting links.
Right. I guess that's kind of what I did with my first site too. But it wasn't, I guess, when did it become, the idea of a blog is kind of a sequential series of, chronological series of posts, right?
Chronological.
Yeah. It was a weblog tour. It was a log of your tour.
Yeah, Jorn Barger's was a link blog, right? One of the first bloggers.
Yeah. How about you, Jeff? What was your, when did you first post?
The week after 9/11, 2001.
2001.
Yeah. Huh.
Mine is February 28th, 2001, and I have it right here. This is the new Leoville weblog. I'll be posting random thoughts here, things too short or stupid to make it to any of the other media I work in. Guess there's going to be a lot of stuff here.
Nice.
Oh, you sound exactly the same. Like 15 years later, your character is still similar. Oh,
I would hope so. It's not like I'm making it up. When did you start, Stacey? You're a lot younger than the rest of us. When did you start?
Yeah, I think 95 is when I got my first email account.
That's pretty early.
I was a junior in high school.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. I had a website in college. I did more stuff on like IRC in chat rooms.
Did you really?
Because I'm a nerd. The idea of posting any of my stuff publicly, like on the internet, just felt really not great.
Well, you were smart. So you were right. I wish I'd learned that lesson sooner.
Yeah. So my first blog was professional in it. I started it when I worked at the Deal in like 2006 or 2007.
We are all old timers, even for a youngin.
Well, you know, we are digital media people.
We are digital
media. Where's your first snap? That's really what we should know.
Yeah. I just learned about that snap thing. I just got it. It looks pretty cool. What do you do with it?
I found a piece of paper. Speaking of blogging, I found a piece of paper on which I had written, I was cleaning up my office, and I had written down the specs for two internet service providers that I was thinking about getting a dial-up account for. And it was mind-boggling to me how much money I paid. I think it was like $45 a month.
Wow.
And I got 5 megabytes or something. And I got FTP access, I think. It was just ridiculous. Anyway, reminded me of, it felt like it was 1,000 years ago.
Is it on the Wayback Machine?
Might be.
Have you searched?
Might be. I should actually.
I think you have to know your URL to do that.
You do, yeah.
My website was on a long defunct ISP in San Francisco called CRL.com, but I don't remember my domain name.
The first one I used called Interlog was run by a 17-year-old who started with IRC, I think, in chat rooms, and he eventually sold this ISP for millions of dollars. A few years later.
Nice. Yeah, if you get in early, you can make some pretty good money on this internet thing.
Yeah.
Just got to get in early. That's the key. Anything else? Anything else you want to talk about? What have I missed?
Do you want to talk about Intel, Qualcomm's new server chips? ARM server chips.
Yeah.
Woo-woo!
Well, this is where you feel for Intel. Go ahead. Tell us about it.
I'm like, oh, yes. So basically today, I think it was today. Was it today or yesterday?
No, it was today.
Okay. Yeah. Qualcomm basically announced the Centric 2400 series, and this is going to be a chip for servers. And it is also the first, it's actually not Qualcomm's first 10-nanometer chips built on a brand new, it's not brand new anymore, the FinFET 3D kind of building up the transistor process. So there's a couple things here. One is Intel's not going to have it's not going to be on that process node to the middle of next year for its server chips. So these should be more energy efficient. They should run, you know, they're denser. And this is also ARM-based chips coming into the data center, which is like Intel's motherhood and apple pie.
Yep.
So kind of scary. I will say reality check here. I've been writing about ARM going into servers since 2009. Every year was supposed to be the year. Mm. We do have now software that's actually compatible with ARM, because that was always going to be a big issue, was getting things like VMware, et cetera. But now with the internet, we're not so worried about that. So this is kind of interesting. Kind of interesting. It is interesting.
Well, they're also beating Intel to the 10 nanometer FinFET by something like 6 months.
Yes. That was...
Got to make them kind of crazy.
Does Intel use FinFET, or do they use their... They have their...
They don't have a FinFET yet. Right.
They have 3D Planar or some other 3D. I can't remember what it's called.
All right. I'm going to test you all to see how up you are on your YouTube stars.
Oh, God.
We need a 12-year-old. It's time for the YouTube Rewind 2016 quiz. Who is this absolute legend, unbeatable champion, and a man with a very sore face? Is it Scott Sterling, Dan Howell, Squeezy, or Falula? I don't know who any of those people are.
I don't either.
Wow.
I'm going to guess Dan Howell. That's incorrect. It was Scott Sterling, sketch comedy group Studio C. Well, let's try another one. What is T-Rex's hidden talent? I'm guessing it's not push-ups.
Handstands.
Handstands? I like it. That's wrong.
Oh,
okay.
Lovers of the Cretaceous period shared the plight of our favorite short-armed predators, donning inflatable T-Rex costumes and flailing around. What 2016 challenge got absolutely glowing reviews? The Sparkles Challenge, the Face Glitter Challenge, the Highlighter Challenge, or the Lightning Challenge? Face Glitter Challenge.
Highlighter.
I am 0-4.
Actually, if you want to watch...
This is why I was obsessed with highlighting.
You should watch the guy in the T-Rex costume trying to go through the American Ninja course. It's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny. Which sports star dabbed their way into pop culture history in 2016? Lionel Messi, Cam Newton, LeBron James, or the Philly Fanatic?
Cam Newton.
All right, Cam Newton. Finally, thanks to you.
Matthew, the hippest one.
The dab, baby. More Orbeez, please. What was the biggest body of water used for the Orbeez challenge? There's more challenges. How many challenges are there? I'm going to say.
What is the Orbeez challenge?
I don't know.
What is the Orbeez challenge?
Apparently, you drop a bunch of whatever Orbeez are on your head.
What are they?
Colorful balls that grow in water, filled up bathtubs, swimming pools, and the view counts of you. This just shows that there's a whole subculture of YouTube.
Yes, there is.
That we know nothing.
That's
and we're the Google show.
That's why I love VidCon.
Funfetti cream cheese.
Funfetti cream cheese is absolutely right. It's what makes rainbow bagels so delicious.
Okay.
Oh, no, your mannequins have stopped dancing. What song do you play to get them moving? Not Walk Like an Egyptian. Window Shopper, Juju on That Beat. Or I'm going to say, I just like the name. Juju on That Beat is absolutely right.
You got it.
What 90s classic had people busting out The Running Man in 2016? Mbop, My Boo, Real Love, or All My Life? Again, no. This is why I feel old.
You got it.
I'm a good guesser.
You got it.
It was My Boo. Where did a water bottle make its mark in internet history and flip everybody out? On a road trip at a skate park, at the Pancake House, at a talent show? Wow. Mike Senatore stunned the nation in May when he athletically threw a water bottle at his school's talent show. 6 million views.
Yeah, I watched that one.
I got a pen. I got a pineapple. What else do I have? A confused grocer, artistic fruit, a pineapple pen, or I think a pineapple pen. Absolutely. I think I vaguely remember that. It was a fever dream. No mountain, no problem. Which city streets? Where there's new CNN star Casey Neistat, Which city streets have the greatest, by who is now withdrawn from YouTube, right, to devote his attentions.
Or from vlogging, at least.
Draw for vlogging. Obviously, he's going to be doing CNN on YouTube. Which city streets had the greatest snowboarding in 2016? Oslo, Venice, San Francisco, New York.
New York.
Snowboarding. Oh, yes. Casey did a great job. I remember
that. I watched that one, too.
I saw that one. Snowpocalypse. Which challenge had people saying, hola, ¿cómo estás? In 2016? The Bienvenidos Challenge, the Cinnamon Challenge, the Domine Challenge, the Say Anything Challenge. Ah, this is culture. This is modern culture.
No, you blew it.
Oh, you knew. Did you know?
I did not.
Was the Don't Mind Challenge? Damn. Back at it again with White Vans. Daniel's son,
Daniel.
Daniel. Who's Daniel? Damn Daniel. Dan LaLaura has White Vans and enthusiastic narrator Joshua Holtz received over 50 million views in February. And he got a lifetime supply of Vans. Oh, the Hydraulic Press Channel crushed it in 2016. What did they not crush? Graphene, diamond, dynamite, or a lava lamp?
I would hope dynamite.
Graphene?
Graphene?
Yeah. You can't crush graphene. Hey, this is all the guy does, is crush stuff with his hydraulic press.
It's the Will It Blend of 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think these, I mean, so they got a lot of views. Are they culturally significant? Is it just because they get a lot of views, does that make them culturally significant? In a year, will anybody think, know, or care about this stuff?
I think it's like any internet meme. I think it's culturally significant for a while. I mean, people drop it into conversation. It's not that different from people dropping sort of Game of Thrones references into conversation. And so if you haven't watched the show,
it's on that level.
What people are talking about.
But I think a lot of people think of it as the next big thing in media.
Well, it is in a way. I mean,
it is, but that's because it's not. Well, I've said this on the show before, but it's not media. It's people passing things around as part of their conversation.
Yeah.
It feeds the conversation.
It's culture.
It is conversation.
The content is not. Exactly. Bingo. When I was on Facebook, I said, stop calling what you do content. And then you get compared to the Washington Post. What you do is conversation.
It's YouTube rewind time. The video is out. We're going to play it now. That's your reward for getting all these answers right. By the way, the only one I recognize. I recognize faces, but I don't know who they are except for Marques Brownlee, who is featured in the thumbnail.
We love.
Let's see who we got here. YouTube Rewind. Let me turn up the sound. Pump up the volume. Okay, who is it? Whose fanny pack is it? Oh, it's The Rock.
Dwayne.
They always have to have one real celebrity amongst all these people I never heard of. Because I'm old.
You know, I try to go into YouTube and discover things, but it's such a horrible discovery platform.
You have to know more teenagers, really, is what you have to do. Because I think
I told my daughter to send me all of hers so I could just get the recommendations from that.
Yeah, these don't become big because they are on the top of the YouTube page, I don't think.
No,
really think it's sharing.
Shared among kids.
And not on YouTube, ironically, or any Google platform, including Google Plus, but Twitter, Snapchat, all of that. So I'm glad I took the quiz because now I'm recognizing a lot more of this than I might have earlier.
And you feel richer for it.
Well, now I know what the Orbi Challenge. Here come White Vans. I mean, I kind of now know. Wait, is that Justine? Can't tell. She was making a face. There's the volleyball hit. There's the White Vans. There's the Casey Neistat.
Yeah.
$25 million he sold Beam and his celebrity to CNN. Good deal for CNN, you think?
Yeah. If they don't ruin it.
I don't think it's...
I guess we'll find out.
I think you can't translate this kind of success. Hey, there's Trevor Noah. Will PewDiePie be in this? Of course he will. There he is.
Oh, there he is.
Is that him? I can't tell.
Was that him?
Looked like
him.
Yep.
I think it was.
What?
It's hard to tell without the emo haircut. There's some construction workers breakdancing. Oh, this is that dance that we were supposed to know. I feel like YouTube's a little bit coasting now on... I don't feel like it was as important this year as it was years past. Am I wrong?
I think they're going to be doing a lot more live. If you look at what Young Turks is doing, they're doing live constantly. They're rolling out, getting it on everybody.
Boy, this was the year Facebook decided live. I even saw NFL ads for Facebook Live.
Yeah.
Why? Okay, here's the pen and the pineapple guy. Why? And then the weird mannequins. And then actual Olympians. And then dancing T-Rexes.
It's great because this is all inside references to a society that knows them.
Yeah.
And we don't.
Yeah.
Point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so sure if you're into YouTube, and you, if you're, must be, is it only teenager? I mean, what age demographic are we talking?
Well, I think the 20s, too.
I guess my 20s. Son would recognize college. A lot of this, right?
Yeah.
He's 22.
Yeah,
you should have probably better annotation.
Oh, no, you're, no, 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 that's the whole point. You don't,
like if it's inside baseball.
Don't pull up the old parts, know what's going on. No.
Yeah. I know, but if you could turn on annotation, that would be awesome. I bet a
for
lot
us.
Of people could do it.
So just have somebody do a wiki around that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they will,
right?
Be
easier to use, too, but...
I only know if... So, is that Marquez? I can't... They go so... Yeah, that's Marquez Brown. In a white room. Here's the bottle of water guy. Oh, this is a takeoff on the Kanye video, right? They're all sleeping in bed?
Yeah.
This is... I don't know. I think there's so much... There's more competition now, isn't there? Than YouTube doesn't dominate as it did.
Well, I think Snapchat has really taken a lot of the... I mean,
yeah.
Snapchat videos are the way that lots of people communicate now.
Well, what you're going to have on YouTube, you can have 5 million subscribers. If you're a star of YouTube, you're a star.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you... You're a star within that...
Within your 5 million followers.
Group.
But hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the end of mass. Do we see one of the Green Brothers there?
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. I'm guessing nice that's Beyonce Lily reference. Singh, right?
Beyonce reference.
Oh, yeah.
I got that one.
Very good. All I do is I look for people like Marquez and iJustine that I know, and the rest of it is like... And then I can say, oh, she had 3 seconds or 1 second or 2 seconds.
The interesting thing about Snapchat is it's all so private. You know, you don't have... It's,
right, you can't have this mass. Public.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the era of mass media is dwindling, is it not?
Oh, the business model is dead, and with it goes mass media,
Is what we do here at Twit, is this kind of last media?
No, this is the beginning of niche.
The end of mass media? It's kind of the last gasp.
No, but you never wanted to be mass, right?
I don't want to be mass in that size, but...
You're niche.
Yeah, but I mean...
5 million is more mass than you are.
No, we do about 7 million a month. We do about 7 million a month. We have a reach of around 5 million.
No, but I think for an individual show...
For an individual show, we're talking tens or hundreds of thousands,
Yeah. So you know, you're the future. You're about
small media.
Yeah.
Small Focus. Media, sustainable business model.
Artisanal media.
Well, that's, we called our ad agency artisanal for that very reason. I've always thought of it as kind of handmade. So there you go. And then now there's a behind the scenes, and then there's a 360. That's new.
Leo, I gotta head off.
Well, good. You just, the show's over. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to do an ad, but if you, I shouldn't have played that rewind. I didn't realize you had to get going. Do you want to do a number before I do the ad?
Sure. Matthew wrote about this too, so we can talk about it as well. The wonderful Craig Silverman at BuzzFeed, they did a survey of, I think, up to 3,000 people looking at people who believe in false news headlines. Now, the problem with the methodology here is that the majority of people had never heard of the false news story.
Mm-hmm.
Among those who had heard of it, so it was then down to like 300 or fewer respondents. But among them, 70-some percent believed these ridiculous false news stories, including Democrats in majority believing false news anti-stories about Hillary Clinton. Does not bode well for the judgment of...
Yeah, but I think the important takeaway here is that most people didn't even see those.
Right. Yes, I agree.
And that the people who saw them wanted to believe them. And this has always been my contention. Is that you don't fight fake news by censoring it, because really it's being shared by people who want to believe it. It's more a statement, just as sharing a YouTube video is, it's a statement of your ethos than it is anything else.
Exactly.
So just
it's
one
about
number.
Membership in a tribe.
Membership in a tribe.
Right. Yeah. FBI agents suspected that Hillary email leaks found dead in apparent murder-suicide.
Yeah.
There were 800 respondents. 22% have seen it. Among those, which is to say 389 respondents, 72% believed it.
It was interesting, though. I wrote about the survey, and I picked up on something that Marcy Wheeler, who's on Twitter's Empty Wheel, mentioned, which was exactly that. The vast majority of people in that survey actually could not remember fake or real headlines. So it was below, I think, 25% who even remembered some of these, you know, incredible clickbait headlines, which just says to me people don't remember lots of the stuff they see on Facebook, or don't see Facebook as a place where there's stuff like news where you might want to remember what it said or where it came from.
Oh, but you get a tone. I mean, you may not remember. It's like those, oh, I don't remember where I read it, but Hillary Clinton was a real jerk. So
yes, that's the lasting impact.
And it definitely has an impact,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
But I think it's mostly confirmation bias.
Well, that's the question. Somebody in the chat room says, but those people already were anti-Clinton, so it didn't change anything. Maybe that's a better question to ask. Whose mind was changed by fake news?
Whose mind was changed? Yeah, exactly.
It entrenches you further into your beliefs.
That's the filter bubble.
Your filter bubble. Yes.
I mean, so I don't know. This is not
I have a link related
solve.
To that.
A filter bubble link? Up. Well, Hank, is that for your closing?
For my thing, yeah.
Closing thing? Okay, then hang on. Jeff, we'll let you go.
I'm going to head off.
Back to work. It's great to see you.
I'll pull out this headset and get another one. Sorry.
We'll send you a new one. No problem.
No, I'll get one. They're cheap. They had one that came in a case, so it didn't get...
That's
this is
need.
The one I travel with, and it doesn't travel well.
Yeah.
It's already been like sent.
It's too late. We already sent it.
On its way.
Oh, aren't you nice? All right. You're too nice. See y'all later.
See you, Jeff.
Bye, Jeff.
Thanks so much. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at City University of New York, the author of so many good books, including Gutenberg the Geek and What Would Google Do. He is also a blogger at BuzzMachine.com and has been since the year 2001. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's a speedy way to get your next home loan or refi. Rocket Mortgage was created by the best mortgage lender in the country, Quicken Loans, for you and us, for the people who don't want to get out of our chair to get a home loan. We want to do it all fast, easy, online. Rocket Mortgage, completely online. You can get that mortgage approval on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, without even getting up from the couch. Submit all the documents you need with a push of a button. No more shuffling through papers. I love the video because they're showing a little on the website, a couple looking at open house. You know, sometimes that happens. You go look at open houses, just kind of looking around, and you say, oh, gosh, we should buy this. Well, how about applying for the loan at the open house and getting your approval then and there in minutes and getting a loan that's tailored for your financial situation? That's what Rocket Mortgage is all about. Only Quicken Loans could do this. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Go to quickenloans.com/Twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Bookmark it. So when you go out and do a little looky-looing at open houses this weekend, you'll know where to go. Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/Twig. Who's eating chips?
That was me. Sorry, it's my thing.
Show us your thing. It's in cellophane.
I thought it was
in cellophane. Oh, now I'm hungry.
Outdoor
okay.
Switch.
Seaweed.
Is this what's on your deck?
This is my secret to automated Christmas lights.
Oh.
All right. So if you are someone who has SmartThings, Wink, any Z-Wave hub like a Vera Light system, this is about $35, and you can buy it a lot of places. It is super simple. It's outdoor capable. It is one of the only outdoor switches out there. So you plug in your outdoor lights, and then you can hook them up through your Echo.
Is this it?
This is it. $40. It's so easy to pair. If you have problems, I can help you. But
can you come over to my house and help me?
Yeah, can you come over to my house?
You could just find me on Twitter. I have troubleshooted so many of these things. So that is for people who are like have a hub and are comfortable with Z-Wave. If you're not, this is not the outdoor version. This is the indoor version. But iDevices also makes an outdoor capable switch that works with HomeKit.
Ah.
That is $80. Ah. So much money. So There you have it, you guys. For outdoor Christmas lights, you want to automate the heck out of them. Two products for you.
Describe for me how you would use these.
So I plug my outdoor, a string of outdoor lights in.
Yeah.
And then I plug it into that guy.
Yeah.
Before I do that, for the Z-Wave one, I hook up the Z-Wave first. Oh, and I should say this has two outlets, the outdoor one. So, you know, I don't particularly love it because I only run, you know, one strand of Christmas lights on each. Well, I run three. You can connect three strands, but I run one to that plug on each balcony.
You could also like have them daisy chained, right? I mean, you don't.
Right. That's that's why I'm not like keen on the two. But right. If you're keen on the two,
the iDevices has two. Yeah.
Anyway, you connect the outlet to your platform first inside because of range kind of issues.
Okay.
So I just, and then you plug your light, you plug that in outside, then you plug your lights in, and it's weatherproof, which is why you use this. It's one of the only weatherproof ones on the market. And then I can control it with my phone. So let me show you my Christmas lights.
Is for turning them off and on, not for like elaborate displays and things.
Yeah, this is just so I can turn them off and on from my phone. I can make rules and schedules, and then I can also talk to it via the Echo. If you do it through the Wink Hub, if you do it through SmartThings, you can do it through the Google Home Hub. So these are my Christmas lights right here.
Oh, that's neat.
There's the group, and then like upper balcony, lower balcony. Oh,
and you could presumably have like an if this then that would automatically turn them on at sunset, turn them off at sunrise.
I have mine set to turn on 10 minutes after sunset.
Yeah.
And then turned off at a certain time. So that's what these are for. And you can also do things like, hey, G, turn on holiday. And then boom.
This will work with an Amazon Echo as well. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yes. Hmm. So that's what I do every year. And I actually do normal holiday. And then I have Christmas Eve holiday Christmas Day holiday, which is indoor for daylight lights. So I have my indoor and outdoor lights all running through the same place.
So impressed. I keep thinking I should set all this stuff up. The closest I ever did was setting up some Hue lights and putting in a Nest thermostat. And then we moved and I didn't bother doing it again. It seems like it's a lot of work, but yet I would love to have that capability.
It's really, I mean, like connecting, you're going to do your Christmas lights. The beauty of of doing it at the outlet is you don't have to mess with like 18 different things. So really, it's like an extra 5-minute process to pair that to a hub.
Right.
So all I have to remember to do is just have my phone on me, basically.
Right.
And then you set up a rule. Actually, my rules are left over from last year, so there's really nothing.
So my ethics are left over from last year, so I'm in this.
Someone in the chat room said their Google Home responded to you saying, hey, G.
What? I did that on purpose so it wouldn't. I'm sorry.
Oh. You can't even watch TV anymore because it all the things go. What? Yeah. What? You asked me? No. I'm sorry. I don't know what you're talking about. What? Hello?
Not you.
Matthew Ingram, what do you got for us?
So we sort of touched on it, I guess, the fake news issue or problem, which has obviously got a whole bunch of different facets to it. Some of them are behavioral. Some of them are, you know, structural. There's the influence of Facebook as a platform, which I think is a hugely complex issue in a bunch of ways, the way we use it, how it impacts us. But anyway, there was when this sort of exploded recently, Eli Pariser, who wrote the book The Filter Bubble and coined the term, I'm pretty sure, went on to start something called Upworthy. He started a Google Doc, and the link is
it's kind of ironic that he started Upworthy.
Yeah, I know. He's seen things from both sides. Let's put it that way.
Yes,
So the Google Doc was basically an open document for kind of suggesting ways of dealing with the fake news problem, specifically on Facebook. Design, how could sort of technology be used to help people identify what's fake and what isn't, that sort of thing. And it just kind of spawned this massive collaborative sort of discussion, which continues on the doc. I thought it was interesting. Some of the ideas in there are are interesting. Some are strictly technological. Some of them are kind of behavioral, or some require things of Facebook. Some require things of sort of users of Facebook. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. If you're interested in that topic.
Yeah, and I kind of like this idea of a collaborative document mm-hmm. with all these people. It's a Google Doc, so everybody's in. I mean, it's you can watch it. It's 123 pages already.
Yeah, and I got into it and posted something. I think it was a single page. So it's really exploded since then. The only problem, of course, is that the entity that isn't part of this discussion is Facebook. They haven't really talked about, you know, they said they're concerned and they're working on stuff, but I would much rather that this was a sort of as open and collaborative as possible. Maybe we could, you know, there could be open source things that Facebook could implement that could help kind of plug into a lot of the fact checking and verification stuff that's already out there. But so far, Facebook hasn't really shown that it wants to be part of that.
I've started to see a lot of posts from a variety of sources on how to detect fake news. Some of fake news, some of them are intended at students, which I think is really the real sweet spot for this, mm-hmm. because students have to learn this. You know, how to know if the source you're citing for your theme or your term paper is legit or made up, or and it's really and useful actually, for them.
This is disappointing, but I wrote about a study recently. If you just Google Fortune and fake news,
I saw it. Yeah,
there was a study that showed that a fairly massive proportion of students in high school and college could not distinguish a fake news story or a piece of sponsored advertising from a real news story.
Yeah, we actually talked about it last week or the week before. Yeah,
incredibly depressing.
Yeah,
so. Clearly, there's a huge amount of sort of news literacy, you know, required, education required about how to do. And I made the same point about Google not like years ago when we were talking about how to determine whether a source on Google is
credible,
trustworthy or not. We need more education and teaching people how to determine sort of trustworthy from not trustworthy.
Here are some.
Well, if it makes you feel better, my daughter, actually, they have media literacy starting in fourth grade.
Good.
So
great.
Well, point their teacher to this from All Tech Considered on NPR. They did a really simple checklist for everybody on if you read something, here's how you could just quickly, you know, here's what you should look at. Pay attention to the domain and the URL. Read the About Us section. Mm-hmm. Look at the quotes in a story, or rather, look at the lack of quotes. Look at who said them. Check the comments, because a lot of times on social media platforms, people will say, oh, that's fake. Here's the Snopes link. Oh, I love this one. If you see an image, do a reverse image search. You may find that it's a clip art that's been slightly modified.
The really depressing thing from that survey was that there were obvious clues, like say a piece of sponsored content said sponsored content on it,
and
they missed that,
yeah.
Or there was no verified check mark and they missed that, or they said the site looked really professional, so they thought it was trustworthy.
This is kind of a related, this is my one of the things I want to talk about. This is from darkpatterns.org. We've talked before about dark patterns. You see it in software all the time. A user interface that's been designed to trick you into maybe, you know, downloading an additional bit of malware or signing up for a recurring bill. Or, you know, when I signed up for AT&T or tried to sign up for AT&T's DirecTV Now, I inadvertently got sucked into a $150 charge. So this is a site where you can browse the library of dark patterns. I think this is a great thing that high schools could probably do, is just to make people aware of a lot of what the games you play, the sites you visit, are really intending to trick you into doing something they want you to do using human psychology. So this is a UI professional who's designed a really great site with bait and switch, disguised ads, something, the faraway bill, which is this is from Capital One. When you check your credit card balance, suddenly a physical bill will no longer come to your door.
Right.
There's just these are tricks that I guarantee you every one of us has been bit by at some point and may not even know about. So there's one called privacy zuckering, which is a Facebook technique, the Roach Motel, site that's easy to get into, but pretty hard to get out of.
Yeah,
the sneak into basket, where they sneak something into your shopping basket.
Oh, that happens on hotel bills. That's in the real world where they're like,
well, this is all real world. Library are actual sites, programs, stuff you might have been sucked into.
My favorite is when you install something and it automatically checks boxes that say,
I hate that.
Redirect my search to Bing and load this thing and add this toolbar. And
we've all been bit. So this is a great site, and I think this would be a good one, too, to get high schoolers to visit. Darkpatterns.org, and you can submit additional patterns. These are a couple of UI designers who really think that maybe this is something we ought to learn more about. Darkpatterns.org. Everybody, I thank you for your time and attention. I especially thank our hosts today, Matthew Ingram from Fortune.com. Always a thrill and a pleasure. I'm glad to see you and talk to you every time. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And, of course, the wonderful Stacey Higginbotham, who is an expert on IoT and Intel and everything else. You can read her stuff at IoT. Actually, Stacey on IoT.com and listen to her podcast on IoTpodcast.com that she does with the wonderful Kevin Toefel, another GigaOm survivor. You're all the survivors.
Survivors.
Thank you for being here. Survivors. Hey, one more thing I wanted to mention since we are heading up to Christmas, when Advent calendars are the big thing. This is the geekiest Advent calendar I've ever seen. I don't know if you know about Qemu, which is an emulator.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Q-E-M-U. So every day through the 25th, a new Qemu disk image. The first one was an OS. Then a desktop, nice. Then a gem, the free gem. Remember gem? The gem desktop. Here's a Tower of Hanoi written in 3.6 kilobytes. All right. Ow. Here's an entire operating system in 660 kilobytes. So you have to have QEMU to do this. Here's a tribute for the anniversary, 35th anniversary of the PC. Remember Donkey Base? Donkey.base? Mm-hmm. So Sorry Ass is written in pure assembly. Fits onto a floppy disk boot sector. It's less than 5K, and we'll let you play this wonderful game. Oh, and day 8 is coming. So this is really fun.
Oh, Leo, that's fun. I had one thing I wanted to
go ahead.
I wanted to update people. My family finally got rid of their, because a lot of people are very concerned, they finally got rid of their Note 7s and switched to the Note 7 bezel edge one. I know.
I'm relieved.
Yes, it finally got too much because Samsung kept telling them every time a phone recall came in, it would be like, your device has been recalled. Are you aware of this? And they finally.
Wow, they really were punishing them, basically.
They really would. I mean, wouldn't charge except to 60% and then constant messages.
Wow. So they got the Galaxy S7 no edge.
Yes. The fancy wraparound.
They got the edge one. Oh, nice. That's a pretty one. I like that.
Oh.
Well, we're glad they didn't blow up.
So there you go. For all the people, my family is now safe.
We're very relieved.
Good to hear.
Thank you for that update. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. If you'd like to join us live, we'd love it if you would. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video of every show available at twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/twig. You'll also find it on your favorite podcatcher. Do subscribe. We'd like to get you every day. Oh, and we're opening a store. This is actually our new Teespring. Teespring.com. This is just in time for the holidays. If you have a Twit fanatic in your family, you can have them join the Twit Army, our newest t-shirt design from Teespring. is at TWESPRING.com/twit. We felt so bad about the Merry Twitmas shirts, which nobody bought. We've created an emergency sale. And if you order by December 15th, I think, they promise that it will come in time for Christmas. So we're going to cut it off. We're only going to give you 7 days because we want to make sure you get this in time for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever. There's T-shirts, there's tank tops, and a very nice hoodie. I would actually really like that hoodie. Join the Twit Army, or really more like the Twit Air Force, isn't it? And they're affordably priced. The tee is $22.99. Comes in a variety of colors from a variety of manufacturers. It is officially licensed apparel. Teespring, TWESpring.com/twit. It's Chrismica. I'm informed. Merry Chrismica. Happy Kwanzaa. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.